morning, everybody. Matt Pavile here with you on 720 WGN. Thanks for staying up a little later with us. Always great to hear the legendary Buzz Kilman when he can be on the air here at 720 WGN. If one good thing has come out of the pandemic, I got to hear Buzz on the radio, for goodness sakes. How are you, everybody? 312-981-7200 is the number. We'll stay up with you all night if you want to stay up with us all night. Happy to have you here. Jess is behind the glass. She will answer 312-981-7200, or, of course, you're welcome to text in as well, and we'd love to hear from you there. Here we are, week two. Is it week two? Is that what we're calling this, Jess? It feels to me like it's 2 weeks now, because it's 2 weeks since everybody has been in my house and not going anywhere.
I would say that week two is a good assumption, but it's... feels like it's been a lot longer.
Week two going on 8 years so far. There have been no major injuries, no trips to the hospital yet from our house, nothing like that. No stitches.
Still got toilet paper?
We do have to. I feel like we have a lot of toilet paper. Now, we're not one of these crazy families that went nuts, but Grandpa Henry found a case of it at Meijer a couple weeks ago, and then we bought little bits here and there. But we haven't, you know, I think we're conserving a little more. I think the ladies of the house are being, you know, I used to tease them that you can't wrap your hand like a boxer when you're using the washroom. I saw there's a meme online or a little post online that somebody, a woman saying, I used to roll that roll like I was on the Wheel of Fortune. Now I'm turning it like I'm cracking a safe open. Got to be careful with these things. But hopefully all of that is... I found...
Special commodity these days.
It is, which is weird. But I did find Clorox wipes at a store this week, and I hadn't seen those. I still can't find hand sanitizer anywhere. Ooh. That's the one thing I wish I had.
Hand sanitizer?
Hand sanitizer, because you go to the store, and then you walk out, you get in the car, and you've been touching all these things. So I want to be, you know... I want to be doing this. I want to be wiping it down. And every time I walk into a gas station or any store right now, I look to see, do they have the dispenser? Do they have that? Mm-hmm. If they do, I'm like going right in.
There's usually some floating around here.
Really?
Yeah.
I don't know where, bottle in the car, though. So every time you get back in the car, you can kind of, you know, freshen that up. Somebody just joked. I said, you know, we're 2 weeks, and somebody says that means 6 weeks from now we won't even be talking about the coronavirus. God, I hope that's true. That seems like a fantasy, doesn't it? To not be talking about this, not be living it, not be thinking about it 24 hours a day.
Every day is like Groundhog's Day.
It totally is. You get up, there's another press conference, the numbers have gone. What are the numbers? It's like, you know, people used to get up and check their lottery numbers every morning. I think every morning we get up and check how many cases are there now. Oh, we got to, hey, we're number one in the world now. We got more than China. Look at us. You know, it's just crazy that this is the new normal.
I don't think
an annoying normal.
My house has ever been so clean before.
Are you cleaning a lot? Because you got nothing to do?
Yes.
It's funny because I'm still working and trying to work during the day, and I'm used to working from home at least a couple of days a week, but not with five other people in the house. It's really, plus the dog. It's really weird.
I feel like that would just be like a huge distraction because like I'm technically like working from home too,
yeah.
But like I feel like I'm not getting a whole lot done.
Well, it's very difficult, and I'd love to hear from you guys about how you have handled this. 312-981-7200 is getting on a schedule. A buddy of mine posted that he's putting his family on a schedule, and they're all trying to get up at a certain time and do certain things at certain times. And there's none of that in my house now. Unless I have a call scheduled early in the morning, I'm staying up too late. I'm getting out of bed late. I'm still working a lot during the day, and my work is now spilling over to nighttime hours because my day is so thrown off that I'll like still be working. Like it's just all so messed up, and the kids are staying up insanely late. Got a college kid at home, so like, you know, he's up. He'll sleep until 12, 1 o'clock if we let him. And I told everybody that next week, because this was technically all four kids were on spring break this week, or what would have been just their spring break. And so I think this weekend we're going to work out that like Monday morning everybody has to get up by 8, and like we need to get some semblance of a normal day. And the triplets, you know, I think that all of their e-learning is going to mostly be like just emailed to them. But one teacher's talking about doing a Zoom thing every single day. I know Jack, when his classes restart at Nebraska on Monday, at least one teacher is doing a live Zoom thing they have to be on. I don't know about the rest of them. But it feels like it's very important that we all just get on some sort of routine and not just live in this like, well, you know, I don't have to get up. I don't have this. I can stay up all night watching TV. We're we're all watching Homeland together from show, you know, we've got these shows. It's just such a, like, it almost feels, I know this is crazy, but this must be what an addict feels like. Like, there's no semblance of normalcy. Just everything's all over the place and there's no rules. You're just like surviving and doing whatever. It's really weird. 312-981-7200. We've got a lot to do on the show tonight. And some of it, we want to do more feel-good stuff because I think we all kind of need that, right? We need to feel a little better about life and how we're surviving it right now.
Definitely.
Coming up after 1:30, Armando Vasquez is going to jump on the phone with us. He's one of the co-owners of La Scrolla here in the city, a famous restaurant. And they are making food for people who needs it, who need it. They're open now for takeout, of course, as many restaurants are. But they're also doing stuff that they're getting meals to people who need it. So we're going to have them tell us about some of the fun work they're doing and the good work they're doing. Our old friend Paige Weiser, writer here in Chicago, is going to jump on the phone. I'm friends with her on Facebook, and she's been posting some really good stuff about life with the kids at home. And she was writing the other day about making sure that we try to find ways to take advantage of this time. If you think about it, if you have kids at home, you will never get them like this again. And while we're so, like I joke about, it's going to be The Shining at our house very soon, we need to figure out how we can take as much advantage as possible of having them there with us and having them be part of our lives and making that as positive as humanly possible. So we'll chat with Paige about that. Our friend Robert Bartholomew, who's in New Zealand, who we often talk to about mass hysteria, he's going to jump on with us, talk about a little bit what's going on in other countries and the laws they're living under and what they're trying to do to protect themselves there. And after 4 o'clock, of course, this huge, huge $2 trillion stimulus bill was just passed. We'll talk to somebody with Lendio, and they do small business loans, things like that. We'll talk about how things are going to try to jumpstart for the economy. 312-981-7200. 312-981-7200. Give us a call. Jump on in next. 720 WGN. 1:18 in the morning here on 720 WGN. Matt Bubala here with you. We'll be here until 5 a.m. You're welcome to jump in when you want to. 312-981-7200. Somebody texted, as somebody who lives alone, you're right about appreciating the time you have with your kids. The time is especially difficult for those who are alone. I can't even imagine. You know, on the one hand, I think those of us that are with people are getting driven crazy by the people that we're with all the time. Believe me, it's quite a special treat to come down here and do the radio show on Friday nights, because I think I spent the entire week at that. No, I did have to. I had to come down one time to tape with Steve Dale all of his radio shows. But other than that, I've been in the house the entire week. Jess, are you getting out much? Are you getting to the store? What are you doing to not be in the house the entire day? Are you trying to get out for walks, or what are you doing? Oh, hold on.
Walking the dogs.
Walking the dogs.
Going grocery shopping. Trying to sit out on the deck.
Now, the city had to get crazy hard. Mayor Lightfoot had to really come down on people because on the nice days, people were out in the parks and doing too much social non-distancing, I guess.
Yes.
So when you go to the grocery store, has it been quiet? Is there a lot of room, or is that one place where people still got to get, so people are getting?
Well, the luxury of working overnight has allowed me to go to the grocery store at weird hours.
Yeah.
So every time that I've gone, like, there hasn't been a whole lot of people there, but I've gone at like non-normal hours usually, just because I'm awake. But I did all my grocery shopping at Walgreens a couple weeks ago, and I got some weird looks because I was like buying eggs and milk. Yeah. And
generally not the place you buy all the groceries. Milk at Walgreens is kind of an emergency situation usually. Like, I'm not running to the grocery store. I'm just grabbing it at Walgreens.
Yeah.
I'll pay the extra dollar.
Yeah. But like, there wasn't anything at Jewel, and Jewel is like half a block from Walgreens, like where my place is at.
Oh, and Jewel was out of it. That's why you ended up at the Walgreens?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Yeah, I think there's a lot of... I saw a story on the news this week up in Minnesota where they haven't been hit quite as hard as here, but they're getting hit. You know, all the cities, all the condensed populations are getting hit because there's a lot of people living close together and it gets passed around easily.
Right.
And I saw somebody on one of the cable networks this week talking about in Minnesota, they're up north in Minnesota, north, I think, of the cities a couple hours. And they were saying people are driving up from the cities and buying up all of our stuff because they can't get it down there. I imagine that's happening in a lot of places. I know a couple of weeks ago I was thinking about, all right, how far away would we have to drive to get some of the stuff we need? And we went to clean up Jack's room in Nebraska this week. We took one day and get him moved out of school. We drove all the way there, packed it up in 2 hours, drove all the way back. And we went to the stores there because Nebraska has had, I think they're one of only 4 or 5 states that's still under 100 cases altogether.
So is he done with school like now for the rest
in
of the
person,
year?
In person, yes. And they decided right away. They decided 2 weeks ago when they shut down school. It was now a lot of schools have said, all right, we're going to close down until this time. And then we think you'll all be back, you know, like April 15th or whatever. It was like, I think a few different schools did like this week was spring break for a lot of schools. 2 more weeks and then we'll come back. I know of a few other kids that I know of that are in different colleges where that was what they said. We'll close spring break and then we're closing down for 2 weeks and then you come back after that. But the University of Nebraska announced right away, this is it for the year. You go home, you know, come back. And the rest of the year, starting this Monday, the rest of the semester will be online only. And I think that was
That's so interesting.
Well, I think it was a smart decision because all these places that hoped... You know, it's funny. I think people didn't necessarily think of this correctly. And I think in some ways we still aren't. This is not just going to end in a couple of weeks. It's not going to, I don't believe it's going to work like that. That, okay, it went through and now it's gone. Ooh, we just had some lightning outside. That's kind of exciting. It's going to phase back in and out and people are still going to have it. And, you know, all the things we're doing right now are just to not overwhelm the healthcare system as this spreads very rapidly through.
Right. But Lightfoot is also saying like it hasn't quite peaked yet.
Well, they're saying the next 2 weeks here in Chicago is when it's really going to get bad. And you look at how bad it is in New York. They're saying the next 2 weeks in New York are really going to get bad. But these next 2 weeks, I think, are the most important for us right now as far as truly doing the social distancing, sheltering in place, doing whatever it is to keep yourself out of line of other people as much as you possibly can. So we slow the spread of this as much as possible. So the healthcare system is not overwhelmed. That's the concern. That's what's happening in New York. That's what happened in Italy. That's what we want to avoid happening here is people dying, not just because of the virus, but because we can't get them the care they need and the treatment they need when they need it the most. And if we get overwhelmed, that's what's going to happen is a lot of people will die because we can't possibly provide the care that they need, and the healthcare system's getting overrun. The toughest part is all the people that work in the healthcare system who are still going to work every day. And I've seen many stories about there's a shortage of PPE. We can't get it fast enough. We can't produce it fast enough. People having to reuse it much more than they should. It's supposed to be one-time use and done. I've seen interviews with nurses and doctors that are reusing PPE over and over and over again. And I know that our federal government and our local governments are doing a lot as quickly as they can to try to stem the tide of that and get more things produced and the whole ventilator situation, everything else. So there's a lot going on to try to do it, but we have to do our parts to stay out of the way and make sure that we are doing the best we can to not spread the virus as much as we can. But I think months from now, this is still going to be an issue. We won't be sheltering in place anymore. Hopefully bars and restaurants can reopen. But we're still going to need to do the social distancing. We're still going to need to be washing our hands. We're going to have to be very careful about not going to work when we're sick. We're going to need to get ahead of all of that so that when the next wave comes around, when it comes around again, if we don't have a vaccine yet, if we don't have drugs to help fend it off, all of these things, if we don't have them, it's going to be up to us to be careful that this doesn't become, take over again and we have to go through all of this again. And I also worry about as the weather gets better, if this is still necessary, people just after a few weeks saying, you know what, forget it, I'm going out or I'm doing this or I'm not doing this anymore. It's going to be very tough on people emotionally to keep this up, I do believe. We can do it, you can do it, but it's going to take some work and we're going to have to really stick with it now for a little while longer, for sure. 312-981-7200. 708 says, China has 1 billion more people than us and we already have more COVID-19 cases than them and we haven't even peaked yet. Yeah, the numbers are going to get a little crazy. That's for sure. But we got to do the best we can. We got to keep our spirits up and do the smart things. And what's interesting, I think, to think about, I was leading towards was You know, I was in a store earlier this week, a Mariano's, and as we were there getting ready to check out, the workers were actually putting down signs on the ground that say, stand here, for the checkout lines to, like, mark off the 6 feet away. And I've heard about other stores where people are putting down tape and trying to drop lines to get people to stay. And all the people that work in those stores, they're on the front lines of this. They're coming in contact with people all day long. It's very difficult. And I was thinking, you know, I traveled a lot last year for work, and I had a lot of travel scheduled this year for work. And all of my April's travel and May travel has already been canceled. That's about five different trips I think I was going to go on. And I was thinking about, okay, so when this time passes and we try to get back to a sense of normalcy, and I'm getting on an airplane, which to me is like, you know, secondary to going to maybe a water park as far as floating in bacteria, a plane where you're all packed together like sardines, and you're breathing that same recycled air throughout, that to me worries me as the best place to go ahead and contract something. And I've always been one who has laughed at the people who wear face masks and do those things. You see people here and there. But now I wonder if that will become the new normal when air travel really comes back. Will you be like, oh, I think I should be wearing a mask, and I know I'm going to be carrying wipes with me and wiping down every single thing I touch pretty often. And I wonder if that's just going to be, you know, after 9/11, there were a lot of adjustments to how we traveled and how we did things. And I would think that we're probably going to be the same way when we really start getting back into airplanes again. I mean, let's hope we get to a point where easily enough, we're getting back to airplanes again and starting to do all of those things. You know, so many more places are closing down and shuttering for the time being. We had a trip set up to Mexico from a long time ago with some friends of ours who we haven't seen in a long time in April. And last weekend, I was still holding out hope that, well, hopefully we'll get kind of past this stuff and things will get better. And, you know, of course it's not. And not only have we closed travel to Mexico, but we got an email from the resort this week that they're closing down all the resorts until at least, I think, sometime in May. So, trips off no matter what, because it can't even be done. But it'll just be interesting to see how those things come back. If you remember last weekend, we had my friend Grant Warner on the show. He's part of the group, the Karras Brothers, that own like 10 restaurants out in the Elgin, Dundee area. And they had them all open as of last week when we talked to Grant for takeout, and they're trying to do what they could. And he told me this week they did close down three of them now, because you just can't keep up the level. And if places are social places and they're not thought of as takeout, it's very tough to suddenly pivot to that and get people to be coming in for takeout. Tonight, we got pizza at a local Lou Malnati's by us, and there's a place called the Randall Roadhouse that's a great little bar and restaurant. And they were doing good business, it seemed, for pickup. So do, I know money is tight, I know times are tight, but do support those local businesses and restaurants whenever you can and get some takeout and enjoy, you know, a night away from cooking. And it, at the very least, it gets you out of the house to go pick something up for a few minutes if you do go do the curbside pickup. 312-981-7200. Speaking of restaurants, let's talk to Armando Vasquez of La Scrolla after this on 720 WGN. 1:33 in the morning here, 720 WGN. We're trying to find Armando, but right now let's say hi to Steve. He's in Wisconsin. Hey, Steve, how are you this morning?
Awesome. I just wanted to give my prayers out to everybody, because, I mean, it was a sudden happening for us, and we probably weren't, you know, totally ready for it.
I don't know if you can ever be ready for a pandemic, like in the way that we have to be right now as far as the isolation and things like that. How are things up in Wisconsin?
The air is a little bit clearer, so it's probably harder for the virus to you know, to do anything to many people. It's done some people some sickness and deaths, but I mean, we're surviving.
Good. And are you staying in the house all day long? How much are you getting out, Steve?
I get out of a 24-hour day about 7 hours.
Well, that's pretty good.
And walk, yeah. and get the sun.
That's good. Well, that's what we got to do, right? We got to keep ourselves mentally stimulated, not go insane.
And mentally, and feeling, you know, stable, and just, you know, positively.
Yeah, that's important. Well, good. Oh, I'm glad you checked in. Have fun this weekend. Stay out of trouble. And
okay.
Stay safe and keep washing those hands. All right, bud?
You betcha.
All right, Steve, thank you so much. 312-981-7200 is the phone number. Three 331 says, my husband and I are seniors, and we work part-time and are supposed to go back to work April 6th, and we are getting paid, thank God. Do you think they will keep that date? Stacy in Algonquin. Well, Stacy, I'm not sure where you work, but April 6th is not far away. And I am not a scientist, and I'm not a politician, and I don't have any, I'm not privy to any information. But everything I'm seeing says that Chicago is the next hotspot, or is a hotspot right now. And they're expecting our numbers to go up dramatically over the next week or so. So I would be very surprised if you are not working right now, that you would be going back to a place of work in the next week or two. I just don't see that happening. Now, maybe, who knows what's going to happen? I think this changes day to day, but there's a thing on TV right now that was showing Chicago as one of the next hotspots. I hope that all the measures we've taken and that Mayor Lightfoot and Governor Pritzker have taken will flatten the curve, that things won't be as bad here as they could get. But I'd be surprised if over the next couple of weeks we're doing any re-engaging. I know President Trump was hoping to have all the churches full on Easter, and I know they're looking at different areas of the country and how you reopen the areas that aren't as hard hit. The tough part with that is, if you do that, you've got to keep people out of there. I mean, all these densely populated cities are getting hit hard, some much harder than others. I don't think any of us can be surprised that New York is getting hit this hard, because there are an insane amount of people in New York all packed together. If you have never been to Manhattan, I mean, it's insane. You know, you think Chicago's a big city. You can walk down Michigan Avenue, except for during the Magnificent Mile Lights Festival, you can walk down Michigan Avenue anytime, and you could be like, it's crowded, there's a lot of people out. But it is not even a quarter of what you see all the time on the streets of Manhattan. Like, it's just insanity how many people are there. It really is. I mean, it blows me away. Every time I go to New York to walk around and go, where are all these people coming from? It's crazy. So I'm not surprised at all that with that population, you can only do so much for keeping people from being around each other all the time. Governor Cuomo said something interesting earlier this week about the shelter in place and the, you know, the self-distancing, in that, you know, a lot of families and people that live together are different ages, and the young and vulnerable are the young and not so vulnerable, or with the old and vulnerable. And he wonders if they should have figured out a different way to do it where the most vulnerable people were not around everybody else. Now, I don't know how in the world you do that, how you, you know, find places for people to stay or get them separate. If you live with a couple of people, you know, in our house, we're not social distancing from each other. I don't know if that's a mistake, but I don't know how you live with people, live in the same house. Now, we're washing our hands all the time. We're trying to be smart about things, but you're around them all day long, and you can only do so much distancing. And hopefully it's, you know, in the neighborhood, we're making sure we don't come within 6 feet of our neighbors and stuff. When we walk the dog, we'll cross the street. If other people are coming, we're trying to be really good about all of that at all times, making sure we're not crossing those boundaries. But there's only so much you can do. And so I think every larger city is going to be hit. And honestly, to me, it looks like the size of the city depends on how hard they're going to be hit. New York's going to get the hardest. LA might end up the second hardest. Chicago and Houston, the third and fourth hardest. It makes sense to me that it will play out that way. I think the only thing that will probably change that is how well the cities are doing in their efforts to do the social distancing. We'll see as weather changes. Two things are going to happen. People are going to get fed up with being inside and go outside more. And Mayor Lightfoot had to come down hard on people this last week as it was, and really close things down. But people are going to reach a breaking point where they're like, forget it. And we're going to have to remain vigilant. And also, we'll see if the warm weather, when we do finally get a good warm-up, does this virus get affected like the seasonal flu does? Will it die off a little bit because of that? That would be a huge help. it also might cause problems in that we relax a little too much. Like I'll keep saying, we're going to have to stay really vigilant with this, it seems like, because it's, and that's my concern about reopening parts of the country. If we reopen parts of the country and then people travel from one part of the country to another, then, you know, that's going to happen. I mean, I don't see how we don't keep spreading things if we're not careful. And we're just going to have to be, even when we start traveling again, we're going to have to be good about. And I think the toughest part is going to be for restaurants and bars, because people are going to be so cooped up. They're going to want to get out and get some human contact. And if we go right back to that, unless, boy, I don't know. I don't even want to think about it. 708 says, with this home confinement, you think there will be a baby boom in 9 months? It's an interesting conversation. Justin and I had this last week on the show, wondering what will happen if people are enjoying the time alone in that way, shape, or form.
I'm still saying yes.
Jess is saying yes. And maybe there will be, but I will say this, that somebody posted this on the internet this week, and I think it's really dead on. They said all of these babies from the quarantine baby boom will be first-time children. And I think that's dead on. The only people having babies during this are people that don't already have babies at home. Because I feel like if you have kids at home, if you've already, now maybe if you've just had one, and they're still young and they're sleeping and they're napping a lot, you know, you're playing 2-on-1, you can handle it. But anybody in a man-on-man situation, two kids or more, there's no way you're getting pregnant during this. A, you're going insane. B, you're tired, you're crabby. And there's no way you're thinking, you know what would make this better? A fourth child or a third child in the house. I think they're right. I think there's going to be a lot of firstborns in 9 months. But that's going to be it as far as I'm concerned. That would be my guess. I'll be surprised otherwise. 708 says, our son is a high school senior who was supposed to use the past 2 weekends for college visits. He has only been to one of his 3 choices. Doesn't look like visits will be possible prior to May 1st deposit deadlines. And our daughter is an ER nurse. Crazy times for a family. Stay safe, everyone. Well, thank you to your nurse, who's your daughter, who undoubtedly is going through crazy times. May 1st deposit deadlines. I am sure that schools are going to change all of that. They've got to. Everybody's going to have to adjust. There's going to be ways to do that. And I think that I would think that, you know, you're going to get a chance to figure that out. I think it's going to be tougher. I feel bad for high school seniors. I feel bad for my triplets who are 8th graders. But high school seniors, college seniors, I feel the most bad for probably high school seniors, because that's such a college year is, to me, high school is the biggest graduation. That's the toughest one to miss, because you, just the buildup for it, prom. I mean, all these kids are going to miss prom, their last prom, and a lot of really cool things that, you know, just aren't going to take place.
And, like, just graduating college, too. Like, I feel like college graduation is a big deal.
Don't you think that high school is bigger, though? Like, I remember my college. I don't know. I just think that's such a momentous thing, moving from one part of your life to another. By the time you're a senior in college, you're kind of already an adult, and I know you're joining the workforce for the first time, but I feel like that's a little more of just a simple transition versus high school to college, where you're going away for the first time and doing all those things. I think that's the, in my mind, that's the bigger one, and the one that everybody goes through. Not everybody goes off to college.
Right. True. That makes sense.
708 wonders how there's going to be a baby boom if you have to stay 6 feet away.
Well, I guess simple logic would make it that you wouldn't be 6 feet away during...
Or else very creative. One of the two. I'm not sure which. But believe me, that ain't my house, so I'm not worried about it. We have 4 kids at home. There will be no baby boom in our house. God, that's for sure. 312-981-7200. Matt Bubala with you, 720 WGN. 312-981-7200 is the phone number. You know that this was supposed to be opening weekend for baseball, too? Like, we're missing out on baseball right now.
I know.
Cubs and Sox are already going to have played.
I know. It's really sad.
It's very sad.
There's supposed to be a wrestling tournament tonight, too, like WWE.
Oh, God. This is what you're missing?
No. I'd rather be watching baseball, but I'm just saying it was also supposed to take place this weekend.
Would you have been watching that? You would have, wouldn't you have? There's no way you're saying that if that wasn't somehow on the agenda for the weekend.
unfortunately, things you do.
My mom. Hello, Mom. Mom is listening. She just texted. Aww. She texted, too. How can you get pregnant if you're supposed to say the prescribed 6 feet apart?
Oh, your mom said that.
Well, somebody texted that in, but my mom already said that. 708 says anyone who had a big wedding planned now, really bad timing. So I've got a few people in my life that are getting affected by this. A good friend of mine's brother had a big wedding at the Four Seasons that was coming up Memorial Day weekend. Now, that's still almost 2 months away. That's been canceled and moved to July. My nephew is getting married in July, on July 11th in Alabama. And I'm really worried about whether or not we're going to end up going to that. I don't know if things are going to get better enough. And will everybody feel up for traveling? You know, what will they do about that? I know somebody else whose wedding just got moved to October 24th, or whose wedding is set for October 24th, wasn't moved. It's set for October 24th, and I have another nephew getting married then. And we have neighbors down the street who are supposed to be getting married Memorial Day weekend, and they're still figuring out what's going on. I think this is incredibly tough times for hotels and caterers and everybody to try to figure out, how do you keep things going in some way? And, you know, what will the stimulus bill do for everybody? I know that there's a lot of hope out there with loans and checks that are coming to houses. I think we all still don't know what that's really going to mean for any of us, or how much that will do. Like, if things were ending in another week or two, I think that would be a huge help. But if this drags on for months and months, I don't know if they're going to have to, you know, how are we ever going to pay for this? I know we can't worry about that right now, but we talk about the deficit and things like that regularly. And then you pass a $2 trillion bill, which just sounds like insanity. But you've got to do it. You've got to get things going and try to save the economy and save people's jobs and get things started up again. I imagine that, you know, if we just, I know this isn't going to happen, but can you imagine if suddenly just in a couple of weeks, suddenly there was like, okay, all clear. It's good. It's all safe. It would be like a countrywide rager. Just like people be out running around naked, getting drunk, you know, staying out. I can't imagine what people would be like after being cooped up for like a month straight. And then if suddenly it was just like they unlocked the gates and let everybody out, it'd be insanity, especially in summer. 312-981-7200 is the phone number. I do feel bad for the people with weddings. That's got to be tough. Is Damon's place, Damon, just as good friend from HVAC Pub, mm-hmm. are they doing carry out right now?
I don't believe so.
They're not. They're just shut down right now?
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, it's got to be insanely tough for all these bars and restaurants that I know are trying to keep up and trying to keep people employed.
How is Grant doing? Have you talked to him lately?
Yeah, I mentioned you were trying to get Armando on the phone earlier, but he told us, you know, last week that they kept the 10 restaurants open for now. They're doing carry out and mm-hmm. delivery as much as they can. He told me earlier this week they had to shut three of them down this week.
No.
And I imagine the longer it goes, the more they're going to have to do that.
Do you want to know what I did for dinner today?
Yes.
Well, my favorite Mexican place, mm-hmm. I found out, does to-go margaritas.
Is that legal? I don't even care if it is or not. I'm glad they're doing it, quite honestly. I think most rules should be suspended right now. So do the margaritas to go.
So I did.
Did you get margaritas to go tonight?
I did.
Nice.
For dinner.
You do frozen margaritas or on the rocks?
Both, but they had frozen ones, so it was like the 7-Eleven Slurpees.
Ah, okay. And you don't like that as much?
No, I do.
Salt on the rim?
Yes.
Yeah.
Usually. They're amazing.
God, I miss a good margarita. You know.
I was just really craving a margarita, so I called them, and I was like, are you guys doing margaritas to go? Because they're known for their margaritas. They're like, yeah, we can make you some margaritas.
That's so cool. Did.
And then when I went in there to go pick up my to-go order and then to go home and eat dinner and whatever, and there was a couple other people like standing in there waiting for their orders, and they were like, wait, you can do margaritas to go? And then they all added margaritas to their order.
Yeah. That's nice. You know what we did last weekend is, and I think I'm going to try to keep doing this every weekend. I didn't set it up for tonight yet, but last weekend, because we've got four or five different couples in the neighborhood we hang out with. Really, I mean, We don't get together with people often, believe me. But you notice that more now when you can't. Absolutely, right? You'd be like, oh, we'd be going out. We'd be doing things. Of course, we wouldn't. We'd still be sitting on the couch watching Netflix on a Saturday night. But you feel it more when you're told you can't, right? You want something when you can't have it.
Oh, yeah, true.
So I sent an email to a few different couples last week and set up a Zoom party. And so we all poured drinks and we all got on our computers. And there were four couples. And we sat and we talked for about an hour and a half. Just about life and how things are going and joked and laughed. And it was so cathartic to all get together in that way, even though you couldn't see each other. Well, you could actually because it was on the computer. But, you know, of course, it's not the same. But it was really cool and really fun to just sit and chat and joke about things and enjoy life a little bit and get to see each other. I would highly recommend that.
Can't do FaceTime?
Can you do four people on FaceTime at once? Four different phones?
Actually, I don't know. I've never tried it.
I don't either. Maybe it can. Hmm. I don't know. But I have a Zoom account for business, so I use it for that.
Okay.
So it worked.
I was just curious as to why you picked Zoom, but now it makes sense.
I had, you know, a couple weeks ago, just to get multiple people on a business meeting, I had to do a little subscription to it, and it ended up coming in very handy now. So I imagine you could do it on FaceTime, but I don't know. We tried to FaceTime my mom yesterday. And mom, I know you're listening and you know how dearly much your son loves you. Colleen said, why don't we FaceTime your mom? And I said, mom is not going to be able to figure out how to work FaceTime. And I don't even know. Mom needs an upgrade on her phone. She's got an old iPhone, like, you know, one of the first rounds of iPhones. And it needs a lot of, you know, she needs an upgrade. We're going to have to get her an upgrade. And I'm like, I don't think my mom's phone necessarily does FaceTime or she's going to figure it out. And Colleen's like, I'm sure she does. We can blah, 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 blah. So we get mom on the phone, all six of us, and we're talking to mom. I said, mom, do you have the, you know, like, and their FaceTime button lit up. So I pressed FaceTime thinking it'll call her phone on FaceTime, but it didn't. I'm like, well, go into your settings. And I love my mom so dearly. Mom, I do. I'm not giving you a hard time because I'm getting to be like this too, mom. I will confess with certain things that the kids look at me like, how do you not know how to do this? But I'm trying to talk my mom into like looking up because if you scroll down in your settings, you can find the FaceTime. And I thought maybe it's not on or whatever. But my mom, when I ask her to do that, she'll read to you everything she sees on the screen and go down the list. And so somehow my mom started reading to me. I think she was under Wi-Fi and like all the different Wi-Fis that she could connect to within her building are popping up. She's reading me on the list. And I'm like looking at Colleen like, Colleen, I knew this was not going to work. And so I'm like, well, scroll down. And then my mom will just keep reading it. It reminded me of years ago. And this is how long it's been since I've been here. Back in like 98 or 99 when I was producing John Williams here. Or 2001. No, it was 2001. No, I'm sorry. It was, 2005. The triplets were born and my mom was living with us. The triplets had just been born and my mom lived with us for 6 months. Thank God she did. And we'll love you forever for doing that, mom. Thank you. And I was working here and then there was a show I wanted taped. We still had a VCR back then. And so I needed my mom to record the show on the VCR. Something was coming on. I wouldn't be home. So I called home and my mom gets up. I said, mom, I need you to record a show on the VCR. And she's like, okay. What do we need to do? And she walks over to it with the phone. I said, okay, just hit the on button, power button. It's on the left. She's like, okay, let me see. Stop, start, power. Hit that power, okay. And like my mom is very methodical with this. So like it took me 15 minutes to get her through this to get the show recording. And I was pulling my hair out because like, well, we're 10 minutes into the show now. Oh, mom, don't be mad. I love you so much. Miss you terribly and hope you're doing good. Oh, 815 says, yes, you can. I've had 3 and 4 people on FaceTime. So there you go. 708 says, La Fiesta on the south side has margaritas to go. So there you go. Jess, what's the name of your place? You should give them a little plug. Give them some love.
It's called Killer Margaritas.
I know that place. That's right by Blum.
Yeah.
You live right by there?
Yeah.
Do you know that Natalie's practice is like a block from there?
Yes. There's two locations in the city.
I've been to, I'm talking about the one that's on Clark just south of Belmont.
Mm-hmm.
Is that by you?
Yeah, I go to that one all the time.
I've been there for lunch many times when we've had clients or whatever in town, and I like that place a lot.
I know.
They have good chips and salsa.
I do. So I got tacos, chips and salsa, and then margaritas to go.
Did you order, because it's interesting, because like if you're having dinner and you're having margaritas,
mm-hmm.
generally you don't have one margarita. So how many to-go margaritas do you order?
Well, I got the mega one.
Oh, okay. So is that like a 32-ounce margarita or something?
No, it's like 18 ounces or something.
That's still pretty good.
But it's frozen.
So I really like that place, but I've only been there for lunch, and it's generally business stuff, so mm-hmm. I've never had the margarita. Are they killer margaritas?
Yeah, they're so good.
They are good.
And they put like real like little pieces of fruit in the margarita, mm-hmm. and they taste like slushies. It's so good.
Interesting.
Mm-hmm.
They have good chips and salsa. Have you had the chips and salsa?
Yes. I brought some chips and salsa home with me, so I can't wait to eat it at 5 a.m.
So wait, what's the name of the place? I know it's science is home of the killer margarita, but I don't know the name of the place.
It's called Killer Margaritas.
It is called Killer Margarita? I thought it says home of the killer margarita.
Well, it's like called, it's, a name, it's like Caesar's of... Killer Margaritas.
Okay. Yeah, I knew it had a
name. I think is the full name.
Our good friend Deanna texts in, while I'm worried about my son's late September birthday, I'm more worried that his venue and our... Oh, she miswrote that. Her son has a late September wedding. But she's more worried that his venue and the independent hotel will stay afloat, and if we'll get our deposit back if we go under. They had to pay a half up front on the 5-night hotel stay. It brings up something interesting. One thing that's been going around is that we should buy gift cards to our favorite restaurants. And I understand that. I understand supporting restaurants and doing whatever you can. I know Colleen's, where she goes and gets her eyebrows done, they're closed down and they can't open. And they've started a GoFundMe for the people that work there. And she was saying she's going to donate to it. And I think that's great to support people however you can. I hesitate on buying gift cards to restaurants. I feel terrible saying this because I know restaurant owners can be like, dude, do it. But if they close down, then you're just out that money afterwards.
True, but you could always use it later. Gift cards don't ever expire.
Not if the restaurant doesn't exist anymore. That's what I'm talking about. Like if they never reopen. You know what I mean?
True.
I think I would more, anybody that's still doing, I try to do takeout a few nights a week and support the local places. Went and got Lou Malnati's tonight and, you know, find other places to do that. But I'm hesitant on buying a gift card if I'm nervous about whether they're going to be there or not. Now, the big chains, of course, they're going to be there. But mm-hmm. your local restaurants, if they're open for takeout and things like that, I would do that as much as possible. And if they have a GoFundMe, I would contribute to that. But buying a gift card and then being frustrated in 6 months that, you know, things aren't there anymore. Oh, that would drive me insane. 312-981-7200. Let's lighten things up with Paige Weiser after the news, which is next here on 720 WGN. We'll send you on your way. 2:08 in the morning here on 720 WGN. Matt Bubala here with you until 5 a.m. Thank you for staying up late with us, everybody. Our good friend Paige Weiser is on the phone. You know Paige, she used to write for the Sun-Times. She's a freelancer in the Chicago area, and she has taken advantage of this time to do a lot more posting on Facebook lately, and I've really enjoyed seeing her writing. Hey, Paige, how are you?
I'm very good, Matt. Thank you for checking out my Facebook.
Yeah, absolutely, and thank you for being willing to stay up so late. When I texted you today, and I said, well, I'm on blah, 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 you're like, that would be great. I'm like, you heard what time I'm on, right? And you said that you're quite the night owl, and your kids have to yell at you to actually go to bed at night.
I have a problem where I get too tired to go to bed. So we've designated my son to very sternly tell me it's 10:30, you need to go to bed, and he'll come in every half hour till I do it.
Okay. And so do you like fall asleep on the couch and just never head to bed, or you just get a little wired at night and just keep staying up? And are you watching too much news? Is that what's going on? Like, are you too like restless to sleep because of the state of the world we live in?
You know, I'm starting to avoid a lot of the news because we're starting to hear these personal stories. I kind of can't take it, you know. So for the most part, I am on eBay, and I am looking at what new needlepoint tapestry cushion kits are coming on the market, and I would never buy one.
I was going to say, is this where you're at in life now, Paige? Are you doing needlepoint tapestries?
I have had this nesting urge lately. I can't explain it. Last time it happened, I was pregnant.
Paige, is there...
No, I'm not pregnant.
Anything you'd like to share with the audience at this time? We want to make an announcement?
No, absolutely not. I just kind of, I find different things really soothing now, you know?
Well, I imagine a lot of people are going through that, and maybe you're nesting because you have your kids at home and around you all the time, where normally that would just not be the case, right?
Oh, absolutely. It's just, it's such a great time to be, like, you know, learning a new course or this and that. And I just want to look at weird frog needlepoint pillows.
Well, I think we all agree and would understand, boy, this is a time to tackle all those projects we never did, or play board games with the family, or learn a new language, talk to our kids, all these things that... We all know, boy, this is a great time for that. It's really hard, though, to get yourself mentally there and to say, I'm actually going to do these things.
You know, I mean, that's exactly it. And I want to emphasize that I'm heartbroken and terrified about what's happening. But the truth is that, I mean, this part where we are demanded by our country to stay home and do nothing, this is my specific fantasy. It always has been since the kids came along. I said it like a month ago. I wish I had a month off just to get it together. To do the laundry, you know,
yeah.
A sit up, something like that. And, you know, I think we were all kind of in shock maybe for a few days and everything.
Yeah.
But the truth is, I mean, life is never going to slow down like this ever again.
Theoretically, we hope it never does. You're right about that. But so that's how we have to think about it, isn't it? That we've been given a gift in some way. Now, while we all have stresses about will we have any money and will life go back to normal and all of these things, the only thing we can do right in this moment is to say we've been given a gift. You know, if you're somebody who's home with kids who will grow up and move away and all of these things, we will never have this again. You're right. And so we have this opportunity to do things with our kids, to really listen to them, to talk to them, to introduce them to things, whether it's movies or books or just conversations. Like, boy, that's a great attitude to have. But how do we mentally get ourselves to stay in that space? Seems to me the tough part.
It's really hard. And I mean, yes, the truth is, I'm on Facebook again and writing down some of my weird thoughts again, because I've never had the luxury of time to say, I'm going to sit down and get lost for a half hour on Facebook. And now is the time, you know. My kids are a little older. They're 16 and 15. And I know I only have like a couple years left with them. And I taught them like nothing. And so I've been like just kind of harassing them with all these little life lessons. You know, they walk past the kitchen and I'm like, Gugon, do you know what Gugon does? Gugon, you need one, you know? And they say they understand. I'm like, do you want to do it with me? I showed them how to change the air filter, which I did not know how to do until I was about 45.
Nice.
There's just so much I haven't told them. I found out today my son doesn't know who Charles Manson is.
Wow.
So we need to have a talk about that. There's so much.
Yeah. Charles Manson is a big one. But I guess he's only 15. Where would he have come across Charles Manson necessarily?
I don't think they teach that in school.
I don't think they do either. There is no serial killer class, is there? It's an elective, if so.
It's up to me. I mean, pretty soon they're going to be out there. And if I haven't told them what's up, God, I can't even imagine starting with them on Ted Bundy. That's like a week.
Were you one of the people, Paige, when the documentary came out earlier this year that had a, like, unhealthy obsession with Ted Bundy? That was going around for a while, wasn't it?
Oh, I'm sorry. For years and years, I have. I once got to interview the author, Ann Rule, and she wrote the book, The Stranger Beside Me. I realize we're on a tangent right now, but it's fascinating.
That's okay.
And she used to volunteer with Ted Bundy at a suicide helpline. So when
really?
All this happened, she's like, that's the guy. I know him. And then she ended up becoming a big crime writer. But there's a lot of weird elements. And again, I don't think they're teaching this in the public school.
I think that's a shortfalling, really. I mean, when we talk about strikes and additional money, it's really a shortage of lessons learned about serial killers.
Well, and it's a balance. You know, I walk past the dishwasher and I'm like, I don't know if they know how to use the dishwasher. So I brought them all over and I said, do you know how to use the dishwasher? And they said, probably. And I said, push this button. And they were like, wow, that's great.
Do the kids do laundry?
They do their own laundry.
Well, that's, you're ahead of the game. I'm impressed by that. They do their own laundry.
It is. I'm very impressed by that. And it's hard for me to say to them, you know, you do it. It hurts me physically to not do it for them. And I know that's not helping them in any way. I wasn't sure if they knew about, like, raw chicken. Again, they're walking past the kitchen. I'm like, you know this will kill you, right? Raw chicken?
Well, explain to me, because I'm going on 50, and I don't know if I know the true lessons about raw chicken. Is it just after we handle, we have to wash our hands really good, or is there more to that story?
Yes, yes, yes. And obviously, my life lessons are kind of incomplete. I just know, in general, they should know that there's an air filter you should change.
Are we talking about on a car or a furnace?
I'm talking about a furnace. Are you supposed to do it in a car?
No, I think generally the oil change people take care of that.
Let's hope so.
Yeah.
I have nothing to teach them about cars. I really don't. But we've been sitting around and playing a lot of Uno. So they're 16 and 15.
Uno. I love Uno.
It has been really fun, but I've had to come up with, you know, rules and post them about how far we can go in taunting. You know, is there colluding in Uno? You know. You very know, specific house rules.
So are you playing original Uno?
Original. I can't complicate it right now.
Well, you know, I'll tell you something fun. If this drags on for too long and you have to move past the original Uno, we have something called Uno Attacks.
Oh, I like.
And so that comes with this little contraption that you put the whole deck of cards in. And every time somebody has to draw, you pass this around the table. There's a button you press on the front of it and it makes a little noise. And then it could shoot out like 8 cards at once, or it could shoot out no card at all. And you're taking a risk every time you press the button, and it builds up the anticipation of what's going to happen. And then somebody suddenly gets, you know, they're down to screaming Uno, and then it comes around, they hit the button, they get 6 more cards. And it's very frustrating.
That is genius.
I mean,
my kids already are doing a lot of hateful swearing, that kind of stuff. Is that going to worsen that?
Did you say hateful swearing?
During play.
Do you have a lot of joyful swearing in your house, too, at times?
Yeah, I'd say we do. We shouldn't, but I grew up in a newsroom, and that is part of my language a little bit, you know?
We keep it colorful.
I hope they know it's not appropriate at church, you know, things like that.
Church, yes, that's good. Now, let me ask you, Paige, because somebody just texted in a picture of their weekday schedule, and it's like 8 a.m., shower, get dressed, make bed, 8:30 a.m., breakfast, 9 to noon, e-learning, no electronics or TV from 9 a.m. to 1, noon, lunch, 1 hour break, 1 p.m. to 3 p.m., complete housework, free time. I was talking earlier about at our house, it's just been, it's like there's no rules anymore. You know,
right.
I'm eating stuff all day long. I'm getting out of bed, unless I have a business call early in the morning, I'm getting out of bed late, and I'm just, there's no routine to anything. So I have a son who's home from college because, you know, they ended that. And like, if we let him, he'll be in bed till noon or later. He'll be up till 3 a.m. watching TV. Like, it's the Wild West. And people like this that just texted this in, I love that. And I'm, you know, our kids all technically were on spring break this week. But I think come Monday, like, we need a come to Jesus moment where everybody's out of bed at 8 a.m. and showers are being taken every day and meals are being eaten in the general time that those meals should be eaten. You know, people are having breakfast at like 1 and then dinner sometimes is at midnight. Like, it's just all over the place. And like, I feel like we have to get back to some routine. If we're going to, you know, there needs to be some sense of normalcy before we all go insane. Are you trying to keep some level of normalcy to what's going on in the kids' lives in your life?
Definitely trying. I think a lot of people who were home the first few days somehow were just a shock. I don't know what happened. I think I was needle pointing. I'm not sure. And I have talked with the kids, you know, this is a good time even before their school starts again on Monday. So I said, you know, this is a time we really could have something cool to show for this, take a course, you know, do something. So my daughter has been using the time wisely and promoting charities and talking about her feelings online. And she counsels volunteers with this, like, teen therapy site, you know.
Wow.
My son's learning how to pick locks. And he ran... I walked in on him doing this. He had asked for a lock picking kit, and I said no. And he says a friend lent him one from school. So he's going to have that skill. Who's to say if that's a good skill to have or not?
That's good. You teach him about 10 buddy. He learns how to pick locks. Who knows where he'll go in life? These are good times.
Oh, yes. I will say that over the past however many days this has been going on, I cooked once.
Hey, that's good. What did you cook?
It's a Martha Stewart recipe. It's my challenge is that I have kids who are allergic to different things.
Sure.
So my one thing that I make is baked Parmesan chicken nuggets, and nobody is allergic to them. And when mom cooks, it's like this national holiday, and we take pictures, and it was, it took me a couple days to feel guilty enough, like, okay, all right, I'll do this.
I will say this. There's one thing you can always do right now that I'm relying on whenever I'm talking my wife into let's order food out.
Yeah.
Is, you know, because it's like, we shouldn't be eating out. We're spending too much. We're eating bad. I'll say, but we've got to support the local economy.
Yeah. There's an excuse. You can justify anything. You really can. I am of the belief that, you know, I really, really do need to stay home. I have a mom who is in Florida, and she's terrified about this. And she's like, please, just have everything delivered at this point. And I'm like, okay, I can do that, you know?
I was made to do this. I was made for this. Yes, I can click that button.
This is my moment.
We're speaking with our friend Paige Weiser. She's a freelance writer here in Chicago, and she's been writing a lot of fun stuff about trying to get through this with humor and grace. We're going to keep chatting with her, and you could jump in as well at 312-591-7200. 312-981-7200. I just somehow transferred back to the phone number from 4 years ago. This is what the pandemic is doing to me, too. 312-981-7200. Matt Bubala with you, 720 WGN.
What are you listening to? Is it a cover band in some college town bar with 9 hours and a guitar? Or is it something to get you through? Just a sad song playing on the radio station. Tears still falling, heart still breaking, cause you're hanging on.
Matt Bubala here with you on 720 WGN, 2:26 in the morning. Our friend Paige Weiser is on the phone with us, hanging out late at night because that's what Paige does these days. Now, when life is normal, when you're at work early in the morning and life is normal, do you go to bed at a good time then? Is this just pandemic induced, or are you always a crazy night owl?
It's worsened with pandemic. So that's been it's so frustrating because you start getting stressed out because you're like, I should be asleep, because then the whole next day is kind of ruined. It's maybe a self-destructive, just another way in which I'm trying to sabotage myself.
Well,
how about you?
Well, I think it's
why are you up?
Well, because I get to escape the house for 4 hours and, you know, be on the radio. So it's funny because there are times when you work the shift where you're like, you know, because I absolutely love doing this show. I love hanging out with the listeners and interacting and talking to you and all these things I get to do. And I'm very lucky to be able to do it. But there's times that this shift and these hours like are very difficult because I got to take a nap on Friday nights. I'm crabby as hell all day on Saturday. Nobody wants to be around me, things like that. So, and that's, you know, most of your weekend. But right now it is a gift. It is a rare and fun gift to be able to leave the house and have a reason. Like, well, I got to go, everybody. I'm sorry. You guys have to stay here, but I have to leave. I have no choice. And now I'm leaving and here I go. And now it's...
Are your kids getting bored or are they pretty self-entertaining?
It's funny. The kids are handling this better than any of us. First of all, the 18-year-old home from college... I got to start cracking down on him because I've given him little assignments and chores and stuff, but like, he's just like, you know, he's at a resort somewhere, you know, the TV's on and they've resorted to, you know, he'll watch the news all day long. And so it's kind of cool that he's staying engaged with that, but then he wants to watch some sports and there's no sports. So we're rewatching the Blackhawks playoff runs. We're watching old March Madness games. There's old Super, you know, all the channels are showing all these old sports. So it's like a time machine of sports, which is weird to me. And he'll watch that. But the triplets, like, they're in eighth grade. And my son, Tommy, who's very entrepreneurial. He's been out, he passed flyers around the neighborhood a couple weeks ago before this all went crazy, but he's being hired to do spring cleanups. So him and his brother, the two 14-year-olds, they're out working a lot of days. They've been out making money and stuff like that. And Anna just got hired. There's a friend of ours who still has to work. And her daughter's been sent home all this work, and she's younger. Anna's going to, like, tutor her on the computer next week, a couple hours a day. So, like, they're staying really busy. It's the adults, it's the older people that are going crazy during this that can't handle it.
That's incredible. I think all our children are so money-driven, and that's not necessarily a bad thing. It's a really great way to, I mean, they're going to have something to show for this time as well. It's a good opportunity in a lot of ways. And you watching sports with your son, I mean, that is something I would never, ever do. But I've been watching Lego Masters with my son.
I want to see that. Is that really good?
It is. I enjoy the heck out of it. We are heckling the judges, who are insane. You know, they're judging Lego builds based on, you know, there being some kind of standard, and there's really not. The people are crazy and awesome, and the things that they do are incredible. So, unfortunately, we gave our Legos away, so it's also very frustrating. Mm. But no, that's been a fun game to watch. You know, in general, I'm pretending like I'm interested. I have the time in whatever they're interested in, and they're not pretending to be interested in what I'm interested in, but that's okay.
You know, I think it's okay right now to hate watch things. If you're like, I just hate this, but then if that fosters conversation and you can as a group hate it together, I think that builds camaraderie. That's okay.
Matt, you are so wholesome. I love that you understand.
Am I?
Hate watching. I feel really close to you right now. What are you hate watching?
I'm not hate watching anything currently, but I totally would, I think. Like, all right, I've never watched the Kardashians, and all the people that are into the Kardashians, I don't get it. Sure. But like right now, screw it. Let's watch the Kardashians. Let's hate on some Kardashians. That's fine. As long as you're okay with me making really snide, nasty comments the whole time, let's watch some very cavalier. That's fine. Let's do that. Let's go
Absolutely.
For that. I'm going to destroy those people while we watch it. But if you're cool with that, I'm in. Let's do it. There's no rules.
We have a common enemy here. Yes. I think that's very, very, very healthy. I'm probably wrong.
You probably are. Paige, can you hang out a little bit longer? Do you have somewhere to go? Is there a bar calling your name or anything right now? See, this is perfect. This is the best time to be an overnight radio host. You're all stuck there anyways. I can't. No, yes, you can. You can be on the air because you have nothing to do but possibly sleep. And I know those hours are all messed up anyways. We're getting very aggressive with our guests now. It's a weird time.
It's been a gift for your show, I think, for sure. Yes.
Yes. I didn't wish this upon us, but I'll take advantage of it as long as it's here.
Exactly.
We're on the air with Paige Weiser. She's going to hold on through the next break. Michelle has called in. If you wanted to call in and share some thoughts on what you're doing and hate watch anything with us, or, you know, whatever you want to add to the conversation, you're more than welcome to. 312-981-7200. More with Paige next. 720 WGN. Everybody's dancing in the moonlight. I'll let this one play all the way through. It's such a good song. 2:35 in the morning, 720 WGN. We're chatting with our friend Paige Weiser. You can find her on Facebook. Send her a friend request, and she might just friend you back. Paige, is that where we can find your writings and your musings on life these days?
You know, it's funny. Yes, is the short answer. I've been, like, hanging out on Instagram a little bit, and I know Twitter is cool. Do you have, like, one social app you're sticking to, or do you try to dabble everywhere?
You know, it's funny, is I feel like that there are different uses for each one, just like the four pictures were going around, like your Facebook, your Instagram, your LinkedIn. To me, Facebook is where all the school parents are and the people I used to go to high school with and things like that. And then there's LinkedIn, where there's business articles and the people that you know through work. And Twitter is where I follow news. Like I follow a lot of writers for the New York Times and the Tribune and overseas people and things like that. And so that's where I get a lot of links to news articles. And Instagram, I don't follow enough people on Instagram. Our newsman, Roger Badish, is on that, like every other post for me is from Roger. So I'm like, God, I do not follow enough people on this thing because it's
Roger
the same people
is
four times.
Incredible with social media. He's all over it.
He is. I don't know if you know he has a book coming out. I think he's mentioned it once or a million times on his social media.
Oh, I don't. He hasn't put it on my Facebook page. He should.
Oh, I think he has. I think that you are just blocking it out or you haven't seen it. I don't know what's going on, Paige, but yes.
I'll
Roger
check and see who I've blocked. Yes.
Yes. Yeah, maybe you blocked
him. What's the name of the book?
Oh, gosh. An Uncommon
Life? I want to pre-order.
Jess, what's the name of Roger's book? I know that you have to know this because you've seen it a million times.
Let me...
We're going to look it up. I should know this. And you can pre-order it right now.
I think most of people my age are on Facebook for better or for worse.
Yes.
And honestly, as far as having good things to show for this time at home, I'm a horrible, horrible girlfriend because friend to women because I feel like I don't have time right now. So I almost don't want to reach out because I know I won't talk to them again for 5 years. And now all of a sudden we do have this time to catch up. And it's been really, really a really cool thing.
Yeah, it really is. Roger's book is called The Unplanned Life, and it's coming out soon.
Okay, thank you.
You can pre-order it now.
I need to read a book. I haven't read a book yet this break.
Do you feel guilty about that?
A little bit, because I know I have a lot of stuff I'd really like to read.
Yeah, I would assume you're kind of a voracious reader, but are you normally? Do you always have like a book on a nightstand that you're catching up with?
I do. I have a lot of books I like to read. I grew up, I was a crazy reader. I was punished by having books taken away from me as a child because I wouldn't do anything else. Yes, I read everything in the house, like The Lives of the Saints. I read over and over. We didn't have that many books. We were reading Gone with the Wind, and I was 10 years old. But I have a lot of stuff here. I got into the habit of trying to read some self-help books, and I think that's turned me off of books a little bit. I know that helped me.
That. I could totally understand that because while you go in with good intentions, it probably at some point you feel, does it feel a little preachy after a while?
It makes me feel bad about myself.
Yeah.
Also, I can't remember everything I'm supposed to be doing, you know. And so one of our house rules right now is read anything. There's just no other way to learn some stuff but that way.
Yeah.
So, yes, I will go. I'm going to go put a book on the floor where I'll trip on it. This is how I do things.
Now, do you ever reread books, favorite books?
Yes, I do. I do. How about you? What do you reread?
I'm definitely a big person for that. When I go on vacation, I like to bring a book. And generally, I won't bring a new book. I'll bring a book I've already read. And I don't know why that's like comfort food for me. So like, I've read The Great Gatsby several times. And we were supposed to go on vacation next month. And I was looking forward to bringing that. And The Sun Also Rises. So like older stuff like that, like I don't know why I get back into and I like reading those again.
It's funny because sometimes if you give them a chance, and I think you were an English major too, right?
I was, English literature.
I like rereading some of these classics, not, you know, to be, oh, I'm so cool, but they are really good.
Yeah.
One of my guiltier pleasures is Confederacy of Dunces. I will read that once a year. It just makes me so happy. Victor Hugo's Hunchback of Notre Dame. Sounds kind of fancy of me. But also, like, Donna Tartt's The Secret History is just great literature that's trashy, you know?
Yeah.
Oh, I can read it over and over. And I think that's okay.
I think it absolutely... I think reading anything is okay, even if it's, you know, if Fabio's on the cover, it doesn't matter. I think reading is important, and it's an escape from everyday life. So whether it's trashy or some, you know, highbrow classic, I think whatever is making you happy is what's important.
I think that's true. I think stats was probably going to get me back into books a little bit more rather than, you know, French women don't get fat. I do like that book a lot, but I don't know that I'm going to read it right now.
I don't blame you because right now, and how is it in your house right now? Is because like I was saying earlier, the rules are out the window and I'm eating at weird hours. I'm eating bad things all the time. I'm determined to restart like health next week too. Health has gone out the window the last couple weeks. Eating bad all the time, eating at weird hours, eating more than I should, not getting outside and exercising enough. I've got to like restart that schedule. Have you kept the kids and yourself on a, okay, breakfast is at breakfast hours, lunch is at lunch hours. You know, there's no like, you know, 12:30 a.m. dinners. Are you trying to do that?
Absolutely not. I'm not. But I need to. And that's what is funny, that we've been home this long and it should have been a couple days where we're like, okay, we're on a schedule and I'm doing better myself. I, over the years, have spent so much money on late night, you know, exercise equipment, right? It's half of my bedroom. You know, I've got like a weight bench and I have this elliptical thing in the treadmill and I am finally using them. It is all paying off right now. My Thighmaster, I know where my Thighmaster is. I'm using it. Everything. I've got, you know, like little, the stretchy bands and the ball, and I've got a little bit of everything. So all of you who judged me for wasting money.
I think the big question is, where are you putting all the clothes now that were being hung on all those things for all those years? Did you have to clean
out
the closet to make room?
Yeah. Yes, they're cleared off. I've got my little gym shoes next to there. And so that's been going really well. But I wanted to kind of have me be doing it before. It's hard for me sometimes to tell my kids to do something when they can clearly see I'm not doing it. I hate to be a hypocrite. I mean, I'm going to have to start being a hypocrite. But yeah, it's hard for me to say, do this. And don't look at me when I'm not doing it.
So. Oh, God. I get that from my kids all the time when I give them a hard time about something. They'll be like, but Dad, I'm like, you know what? It doesn't matter what I'm doing. This is not about me. This is about you. And you should want to be better than your father. That's what I want for you, is you to be better than me. So don't look at what I do. Look down at what I do.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. I'm like, you should detest me and rebel by becoming a normal person.
Rebel by getting good grades. Please.
Absolutely. Absolutely. I'm trying. And I'm starting to do a little bit more of the cooking in there. They're so touched. One of the life lessons I'd like to share with the kids is the joy of opening like a crescent roll tube. You know how the dough kind of like
just pops out of there. Yeah.
Yeah. So I did those yesterday and I'm like, okay, well, you could put cinnamon on these. You could put little hot dogs in there. And they're looking at me like, who are you? What is this magic? So I think the more I can do some normal meals, that's going to help a lot.
I imagine it will. You know, it's one of my worst memories from childhood is pigs in a blanket with those crescent rolls and like the bad Oscar Mayer hot dogs. Like that, yes. I have like PTSD from that.
No, I'm making those next week.
Okay.
Those are some oldies but goodies. I'm going back to my childhood and what I was taught, you know, to eat. Yeah. You know, just the fried bologna sandwiches.
I will admit, my mom made that a few times when I was a kid, and that is surprisingly good. I know we all now are like, oh, bologna. Nobody buys bologna anymore. Why would you buy bologna? But fried bologna was really good.
It was great. And my mom would make fried peanut butter and jelly.
Oh, I know.
And that is just, it's going to blow their minds. Oh, my gosh, I'm very excited. So many things I have to pass on, you know?
It's like you're taking this moment like we only have a couple of months left. Like now you're like, okay, I'm going to die in 2 months. I'm going to impart on you every piece of wisdom I ever had, because not that you're going to die, but you just may never have this time again. So now you're just trying to jam it all in.
We will not ever have this time again. They can't leave. They're here.
Yeah.
I can scream it through the door if they're not going to come out. And it's in their best interest to just come out and indulge me, and then they can carry on.
Do you think that's why your son is trying to learn how to pick locks, like it's an escape mechanism for him at some point?
I don't know what it deeply means. I did. I walked in on him. I didn't know he is the lock-picking kid. And I walked in on him. I mean, a couple of years ago, I'd walk in on him and I'd see that he had Googled on like puppies playing. And I'm like, aw. And now he's training to become this, maybe it's good for law enforcement or is it only good for crime?
That's a good question. I don't know. I guess he could go either way. But you know what, yeah. Paige, I think it's still a win because most people with 15-year-old boys are not worried that when they walk in, they're going to catch him learning how to pick locks. They're worried about other things. So in some ways, you know, I think you've won.
Oh, he's the best. He's the best. I do try to give them some privacy, but yeah, when I walk in, it's usually not what I think it's gonna be. It's always just really weird. I did go into my daughter's room when she wasn't there because she's there all the time, and she keeps M&Ms under her bed. Okay.
Oh.
So I may have sneaked in there when, you know, she was distracted elsewhere. And so I look on the floor, and she has one book is about preparing for college, and the other one is poetry. I'm like, what? Have I taught you nothing? This is how you're spending your downtime?
Well, good for, are you proud of her of that, or are you worried that she's wasting this time when you can study and learn how to move away anytime? Right now, you should be eating trashy food and reading bad magazines.
I'm so proud. What I want her to do is hate watch like every season of The Challenge with me, you know, like just really get into the mythology of the layers of the generations that have been playing. And she's reading poetry. So.
Wow. Well, I mean, that's good. That's good, right? I mean, we can't, it's hard to force people to read poetry these days. So that's good that she found it on her own, I guess, right?
I can't. If you have something to say, just say it. You know?
Don't rhyme it.
I do not understand poetry, never have.
I always struggled with poetry, too. It was not.
Oh, yeah.
Now, she's a sophomore or junior?
She's a sophomore, okay. But mentally wants to be in college.
Sure, but you've got to be happy. Like, I feel really bad for, like, somebody texted earlier that their kid was supposed to go on a couple of, the spring break for a couple of college visits, and now that's all screwed up. I mean, I feel so bad for the seniors in high school.
Seniors in high school, seniors in college, and they don't seem super aware of it yet, but... and I'm sure there'll be ways to make it up, but they must feel like they're really missing out on big parts of childhood and growing up. I do. I'm wondering what's going to happen. I really am.
And like prom, I feel bad for prom. And luckily your daughter is a sophomore, so she'll still have 2 years of prom, but that really stinks for people.
No, did you see on Minecraft, they're having like virtual graduations.
On Minecraft?
On Minecraft virtual weddings, and I love Minecraft to the point where, gosh, when the kids, maybe 5 years ago, they came to me together and said, Mom, please stop playing Minecraft.
You haven't moved on to Fortnite yet?
No, because that's not cool. That's not cool right now. But I would get a little absorbed. And then when you lose everything... Oh, that is when mommy would swear. So they're playing. I'm trying not to get into it. But I wonder if that's bringing a lot of people together. You know, Animal Crossing came out, and that's been, I think, kind of a social thing for a lot of kids and adults.
I don't know what Animal Crossing is. What is that?
You're so cute. it's a game. I think you play it on the Switch. And I think it's kind of innocent, but a lot of people are, you know what, any TV shows or games or books that are coming right now, they are golden.
Yeah.
I mean, we have nothing to do. Yes. So this game, I think, has really taken up a lot of time for a lot of people. It's been a godsend.
Animal Crossing. I'll have to look into it because my boys... They were big into Fortnite like 2 years ago or a year ago, and then it went away, and they said, oh, nobody plays anymore. But now they're playing it with their friends every day. It's come back.
And I still floss, you know. It's not like I'm not floss dancing. No, the nice thing about Fortnite was that it really was social. You know, they were playing together. I like that part of it. It's not just... them and their computers. I like all of the social stuff that brings them together.
Yeah. So do you have any, since you've spent some time thinking about things, first of all, I want to bring up before we wrap up, you had some hate or some figure, you were trying to, wrap your mind around your feelings for Gwyneth Paltrow. And and you feel that it all, maybe she went south. It wasn't Goop. It wasn't her candle. It was Contagion, the movie, you think?
Matt, it just, all becomes so clear to me, okay? Did you see Contagion?
You know what? I didn't remember if I had seen the whole thing or just parts of it, but when this first started going crazy, when everything, like 2 weeks ago, when everybody got home, we decided, okay, everybody's going to get to pick a movie or TV show, and we're going to rotate, and we're going to all watch what each other wants. And early on, I decided, well, we're going to watch a bunch of virus movies. So we watched...
horrible.
We watched I Am Legend, the Will Smith one, where he's the last guy in New York.
Wow.
And we watched Contagion. And Contagion's the one, we haven't gone to Outbreak yet. That's going deep in the vault, but we got to get out Outbreak. But I think Contagion relates really well to right now. Maybe not with how fast it spreads and how deadly it is immediately, but I think it's really good for this time. And I thought by showing them this now, it'll scare them into really washing their hands all the time.
Yeah. No, it's there, and this isn't a spoiler because in the very beginning of the movie, it starts with you know, Gwyneth Paltrow, and she's off, and she's a working mom, and she seems to be the first person who gets this virus, and then she starts passing it on. And at the time, I was a Gwyneth fan. You know, I liked her in some things. Talented Mr. Ripley was really good. I liked her in Emma. And honestly, it was almost like after this movie, we didn't like her as much. And I don't know if we realized that we maybe have internalized this fictional role where she, like, set off this huge global pandemic or not. But I think maybe I was blaming her for the coronavirus.
That's interesting. Now, do you think you were madder at her about spreading the virus? Because that's not her fault. She didn't know. Or were you mad that she cheated on Matt Damon?
I just, he's such a sweetheart. Am I right?
I don't know. You know what? One of the other movies we've watched during this is Good Will Hunting, actually. My older son made us all watch that, which I'd seen before, but the triplets
had.
I love Good Will Hunting. I think that's an incredible movie. But that's a very different Matt Damon than the Matt Damon in Contagion. And I don't know if, I don't know about my feelings for Matt Damon right now. I don't know.
I think we should maybe channel all of our fear and our anxiety into hating celebrities. I'm okay with that. It seems, I mean, it's hard for us. They're used to it.
That's true.
I did write on Facebook, I did apologize to Gwyneth Paltrow.
You did. It was very kind of you.
I gave her, you know, a few pointers in life. Not that I'm really in a place to give advice, but, you know, I realized I think I'd been unfair to her because of her link to this global pandemic.
It was just a
psychological epiphany for me, and I wondered if maybe we should all admit it, you know.
I love that in your post you apologized to her, yet put the worst possible picture of her from that movie you could, because she looks very pretty in the movie at first before she's truly sick, but instead you put her on the hospital bed dying, looking really bad.
Was that obvious? I was trying to be more passive aggressive with that. That was obvious, huh?
So that apology might not have been as heartfelt as you claimed it was.
I tried to be really straightforward, but you got me on the photo. That was not the best one. But, I mean, I don't know that many people have issues with Matt Damon.
I don't know, and I don't know that I do until right now, maybe thinking about it. I don't know.
We'll talk about this.
The whole Jimmy Kimmel, Ben Affleck thing. Are you more of a fan of Matt Damon or Ben Affleck?
I love watching those videos. That's one of the life lessons I taught my children. I said, please watch this.
When Jimmy Kimmel and him fight?
Yeah, so Jimmy Kimmel did some great, his girlfriend at the time, Sarah Silverman.
Oh, so are we talking about the songs that they made?
What were you talking about?
I don't know. Just, you know, that's a running bit on his show forever. But yes, he did. Sarah Silverman wrote the song about how she's sleeping with Matt Damon to get back at Jimmy. And then Jimmy made a very funny video about how him and Ben Affleck were together.
They were incredible. It was the height of creative art. It was really, really good. Do you think you're mad at Matt Damon for cheating on Jimmy Kimmel?
With Sarah Silverman? Maybe that. Boy, we have some deep-seated emotional issues we've gotten to tonight. I'm impressed with us.
This is fascinating because you're right. He was really rude about it. He was taunting him. Talking about doing it on the towel by the door, and you're right.
You remember all the lyrics, don't you, Paige? You could recite it if you needed to.
It made me happy, but you're right. Maybe you know, we internalize some of these things. So I mean, make a note to revisit that issue when you're talking to your therapist and see where you can get.
I will. Paige Weiser, thank you so much for spending time with us. Thank you for sharing your posts on Facebook. Please keep doing it. We need all the help we can to get through this time. And I also agree with you that it is okay to hate celebrities right now. It's the least they could do is offer themselves up for our private hate, which, you know, we all privately hate celebrities at times, you know, certain ones. But it's okay to talk to people about that at a time like this. I think that's the sacrifice they must make right now for all the good that they get.
I agree. I think this is a nice trend to maybe embrace.
Paige Weiser, we'll talk again soon. Thank you so much for coming on tonight.
Matt, I'm really honored. Thank you so much for having me on.
Absolutely. We will talk again. Paige Weiser, give her a friend on Facebook and see some of her fun writings as she survives the coronavirus with two kids locked into the house. It is time for news in a couple minutes here on 720 WGN.
Turning back.
Nine a.m. here on 720 WGN. Thank you so much for staying up late with us, everybody. We're here until 5 a.m. when Orion Samuelson joins us with the morning show. Before we get to our friend Robert Bartholomew in New Zealand, let's take a quick call from Ron in Michigan. Hey, Ron, good morning. How are you?
Good, Matt. Matt, you know, my son just returned last week, Friday, from England. He was studying there, and he's on his second week of home quarantine. He's doing fine. He's healthy. Good. And it's my wife and him, and me and my wife are like a cat and a dog at each other, you know.
Sure.
But we're surviving.
Good.
But, you know, all the farmers are out here listening. And you know, I think it was your show maybe 4 years ago, actually, this came up.
Okay.
But this virus that's going around, it can be tied, in my opinion, and I want farmers to tell me I'm wrong because I've brought it up to them here in Michigan. Our embargo, the Trump embargo against China, and their food products, China's been under a food swine fever for over 3 years, maybe longer, which decimated their swine production of pork. And Trump went into the embargo about a year ago now, knowing that this was the case, and he thought he could bring the Chinese to their knees. And what it did, though, the Chinese wouldn't buckle down, but they ramped up their eating of wild meat. Something they've done forever, you know. And my son brought this up to me when I brought it to him. He said under Chairman Mao actually ramped up the production of wild meat among Chinese farmers to increase their production of protein. So directly, our use of food is a weapon against the Chinese. And we've done this before. You probably don't remember this, but when President Ford, it was either Ford or Carter, right in that period, swine flu was introduced to Cuba to decimate their swine population, and a few years later it bounced back to us in the 80s. So this you know, they're saying that, you know, the virus was not caused in a laboratory in China, and even if it was and those animals were sold in the market, it still goes back to the fact our use of food is a weapon to bring the Chinese, or let's say the Native Americans, when we slaughtered the buffalo and forced them onto reservations, and we said we're going to feed them, we're going to give them beef and flour, and what do we give them? Whiskey. So, you know, this whole virus thing, I'm saying it's the Trump, not China virus, because that China virus stuff is causing Chinese people, Asian Americans, to be attacked in this country. And many of our best and most valuable healthcare workers are Asian Americans. So Trump and his racism and his embargo, in my opinion, has caused this virus, this worldwide virus. And I'm telling all the farmers out there listening in Iowa, you tell me I'm wrong. Prove me I'm wrong.
All right, Ron, I think that's all right. You're making a bunch of statements that nobody can prove anyway. It's all opinion, right? I would say that there have been other viruses that have come out of China in separate years. The open meat markets are what we're reading about, and this is not well regulated, and it sounds like this came from something like that. So I would say that, you know, it's not under this administration. It's under previous administrations. We've had other outbreaks come from China. Countries use all sorts of goods as weapons to exact better trade deals, or because they're upset about things, or whatever it is. I don't think you can blame. There's a lot of things you can blame on the Trump administration. This pandemic is not one of them. I would completely disagree with that. We have read nothing from reputable news sources to indicate anything along those lines. You know, there's a story that it wasn't a human-made virus, and the way this virus, what it sounds like with the bat and everything came about, sounds like something naturally occurring because of things that aren't regulated well in open markets. Now, are they forced to have these open markets because we won't trade with them enough meat and things like that to cover the whole nation? I don't know. That sounds like a big above my pay grade discussion, but I think that trying to say, oh, you can blame it on this administration or blame it on that, I think is silly. And until reputable sources come out with things like that, that's the type of stuff that people start spreading around, like the U.S. Army did this or this did this. And I think it's silly to engage in that type of thing. Whatever we're reading from scientists is more what I would go by. And it sounds like it's an open meat market type situation where something happened. I think they still don't know for sure. I don't know if they'll ever track it down exactly, but let's not go wild on speculation. But boy, the perfect segue into my next guest, our friend Robert Bartholomew, who we've talked to much over the years about things like mass hysteria and people getting carried away with thinking things certain ways and how that can spread around a population very quickly, joins us on the phone right now. Hey, Robert, how are you?
Good. How are you doing?
I'm good. I'm good.
You know, Ron there from Michigan, I think he has a career in radio. He has a tremendous voice.
He does.
I'm not sure about the argument, but he has a tremendous voice.
Hey, these jobs are scarce, Robert. Let's not encourage anybody else to get the microphone here. How are things in New Zealand, my friend?
Well, we're all locked down. I mean, everybody is locked down unless you're a grocery worker or a healthcare worker or in a few essential services. That's it. You're staying where you are. Now, right now, they're saying for the next 4 weeks. We're only on day three.
Yeah.
And I've already removed all the sharp objects from the house here. We're getting on each other's nerves already. I think that people here are just getting antsy, and it's only day three. Yeah. It's hard to imagine it's going to go for 4 weeks, but we'll see.
Well, Robert, we're on 2 weeks here. I can't remember if we've been on shelter in place now for 2 weeks or if that's only been one. It's 2 weeks since my son came home from college when they shut everything down. And so we've had six people in the house now for 2 weeks. We're normally, you know, during the day, there's maybe one. And now it's and Lori Lightfoot, our mayor, just announced, you know, they set it up as going through April 6th. I think here in Chicago, they're saying it's going to go at least until the end of April. Pretty much any city that has a dense population is getting affected very, very hard here. Now, in New Zealand, is that countrywide that lockdown is in place everywhere? Or is it separated out by provinces?
Everywhere. But there's only 400 some odd cases, I think, at this point. I think it's the low 400s. So it hasn't really spread massively. They had low 80s today in terms of the numbers. And that was about the same the day before. So, you know, I'm hoping that it goes down to a number where there's no community spread. And I think, you know, it's inevitable. We're going to all have to go back to work at some point. Yeah. And it's not going to be out of the system. It's still going to be there in some form or another. And they're just going to have to try to live with it and keep it reduced. Otherwise, the economy is going to collapse.
Well, I think the whole thing, and it's hard for us to grasp exactly why we're doing all this, because all this is really about is not preventing everybody from getting it or stopping it. It's stopping it spreading so quickly that the healthcare system is overrun. And we saw it in Italy, and it looks like we might see it soon in New York, where they're just at breaking points on having the beds, having the ventilators, having the healthcare workers, having the PPE. You know, it's getting to dangerous times for certain areas right now. And to me, it sounds like New Zealand enacted this quickly and early, and hopefully you guys will be able to really limit how bad it gets there by having been very proactive, it sounds like, in shutting things down.
Yeah, they have this policy, go hard and go early. Well, part of it, I think they're lucky because we're isolated. And it's you can't drive here. You just have to fly in. But, you know, I think you hit the nail right in the head. Why are so many people alarmed? They're alarmed because they're worried that the demand for beds is outstripping supply. And That's not a function necessarily of the death rate, but how easily this COVID-19 is spread. And it's really interesting when you look at this. I mean, as of right now for Germany, I'm looking and there's been 50,811 known infections and 351 deaths. That's well under 1% for the mortality rate. Italy has a mortality rate of over 8%. This is a massive, massive difference. And look, there's something going on that's beyond social distancing. What is Germany doing differently than, say, Italy? And what Germany's been doing differently is they've been testing citizens with mild symptoms, unlike other countries whose focus has been to test those who are sick or at high risk. And so I think that's a glimmer of hope. I see this as a piece of optimism. Even with the greater testing of people with mild symptoms, it's important to remember that according to the World Health Organization, the majority of people with COVID-19 show no symptoms or are so mild that they don't even realize that they have the virus. And so you've got this situation where if this is accurate, truly accurate, then the mortality rate in Germany might be much, much lower than what it already is, and it's already low. So you've got these different factors driving the mortality rates just dramatically different all over the place. And it's, you know, you look at Italy and it's like, my gosh, 8%. It's panic mode. It's like 8% of the population who have this are dead. I mean, that's just very, very serious. But then you look at Germany and it's like, what is going on? And if you look at Italy, the vast majority of deaths are in the north, and Italy has the worst air pollution in northern Italy in all of Europe. Before the outbreak, one of the country's leading environmental scientists described the pollution there as frightening and alarming. The spread of infection could also be much higher in Italy because they have that custom of kissing people on the cheeks when people meet. Italy has one of the oldest populations in Europe. The average death rate from coronavirus is 81. So you got all these factors, and then you have to realize also that Italy is the epicenter of the European anti-vaccination movement. I was looking at the statistics recently. Elderly Italians who've been fighting off the flu would also be at greater risk for COVID-19 because I looked at the study, 83,000 elderly residents in northern Italy, only half of them had been vaccinated against the flu. So you've got all these factors that are driving up that mortality rate compared to, say, Germany. But here's one that's really, really interesting. And this could really be a game changer, and that is this professor, Walter Riccardi. He's an advisor to the Italian Ministry of Health. And he made this observation that the high death rates being reported from Italy may reflect the way that deaths are recorded in Italy, because the way they code deaths in their country is very generous in the sense that all the people who die in hospitals with the coronavirus are deemed to be dying of coronavirus. But you have a very elderly population there, and people who are very seriously ill anyway with comorbid conditions, that's having serious, multiple serious health issues at the same time. And what this reminds me of is that so-called French paradox, you know, the observation that French people have a relatively low incidence of heart disease, even though they have a diet that's rich in saturated fats. And for years, studies were looking at red wine and superfoods and all these things. But now there's evidence from the World Health Organization that the number of heart attacks in France may have actually been significantly underreported due to the way that French authorities collect their health statistics for heart disease. So it's really interesting. I mean, I think the key to understanding what's going on right now is getting a grip on the true mortality rate, the death rate. And even now, well into the pandemic, we don't know what the true mortality rate is. And it's all over the place.
Yeah, it really it varies from country to country, and it's interesting because you had talked to me previously about the pollution in Wuhan and, you know, how that probably affected things and the high smoking rate in China. And so there are a lot of things certainly that aren't being taken into account. Now, Robert, it's interesting because you talk about the mortality rate, and I maybe I'm wrong. Maybe I'm not seeing or feeling the same things, but and I don't know exactly what everybody else is feeling here, but I'm not worried. That's not like my overlying, oh my God, how many people are dying from this killing them. I think the worry here seems to be more, and certainly why we are trying to flatten the curve and everything, is not that, oh, this virus will kill you, but more if we keep spreading the virus, it's going to get to people who it will kill them because maybe they already have underlying issues, they already have other problems, or because we're going to overtax the system so bad that we don't, you know, like in New York City, they're already sharing ventilators and doing things that they wouldn't normally do. Yeah. And things like that that happen. I think that's more where I see everybody concerned, is that we can't let this spread. And the healthcare workers who are all being put at risk for having to work, you know, on these cases all the time with something that's so contagious and being spread around. And the more healthcare workers that get it that then can't go to work, the more that system is going to be taxed. And people who just have heart issues or other issues that maybe are affecting them, or a pneumonia that they got from a flu, aren't going to survive how they normally would if we had our regular healthcare system working, maybe as tenuous as that is in normal times. But when we add all this on top of it, I mean, that's the real thing that why I, you know, when we talk about testing and why are these countries doing so well, it sounds like a lot of them because they test early and test more people and say, oh, you need to isolate, then they're not spreading it around as much. If we're not isolating somebody until after they've taken a test because they had all these symptoms, then they've been around for 2 weeks spreading it around. And the earlier you can get somebody isolating, it seems like the better it is, right?
Yeah, and you know, that's such a good point. This is a very unusual virus in the sense that so many people are asymptomatic. They show no symptoms. And, you know, that's the key part there as well. So if you got 4 out of 5 people who have either no symptoms or it's so mild they don't even realize they have it, you could potentially multiply the number of confirmed cases right now times 4, which would give you a much bigger number, but the mortality rate would go down, but you're still going to have this wave to deal with. And if these people who are carriers are out there, it might be much more spread than people even realize, which on one hand could be a good thing, because you have all these people who are eventually going to be immune, one would think.
Yeah, that's the question. And, do we know that? We don't know that right now, right? We don't know for sure. Like, naturally, the thought would be your body learns to fight this off. But that's, you know, is it going to be like the flu where you can get it every year? I know the flu changes, and that's why we don't fight that off as well. But there's just so much unknown about this at the moment, right?
Well, they call it the novel coronavirus, the new coronavirus. On the other hand, I mean, all viruses are new, right?
Yeah.
I mean, we get to understand them. They've sequenced the DNA. You know, there's never been a situation where the entire world's medical community is focused so much on one thing right now. And I think, you know, that's a good thing. And it's good for potential, you know, they're trying all these different medical interventions, which could help as well dramatically if some of these prove to be beneficial. And at the same time, the attempts to do this vaccine, but it looks like the vaccine is going to take a while. So, you know, the focus is on the interventions, although you never know.
Well, I think you're right. It's probably never in history have we had such medical power aimed at one thing at one time. So, and to me, that really is the hope, because I think what we're not thinking about, we're also fixated on the shelter in place. Like in Illinois, we're in a shelter in place, and other states in the country are on a shelter in place where we've, you know, our mayor has locked down the lakefront is not open, the parks are not open, the police will shoo you away. Like, we're really trying hard to flatten the curve here. And we're thinking about these next 2 weeks, these next 3 weeks, these next 4 weeks. But what we're not thinking about is 2 months from now. Now, I know we're all hopeful that as the weather warms, things are going to get better, but we don't know that, right? And I believe in pretty warm countries, they've still had a decent amount of coronavirus, so I don't know how hopeful that is or not. But this is going to not just suddenly, okay, you know, it's not like a swarm of locusts that are going to pass by and then we can all come out and say it's fine. I think everybody thinks this is going to be around and it's going to keep getting passed around. And all we're doing right now is not sheltering to get through it and have it be gone. We're sheltering to stop the overflow of the healthcare system. But the thought is this is still going to keep going around. It's not going away anytime soon.
That's right. And I think it's obvious what's going to have to happen in the relatively near future, and that is people are going to have to go back to work. And those people who are the most vulnerable with these pre-existing conditions, if they can, they work remotely. Students who have these serious health conditions can study remotely. But in terms of the economy, I mean, you're looking at a choice here. You're looking at the collapse of the global economy versus trying to shelter a small but significant number of susceptible people. And I think we're going to end up going to some kind of balance. I mean, certainly if people go back to work in certain areas or certain groups of people go back to work, we can't be going to church on Easter, as Donald Trump was suggesting, because we're going to be back in the same situation again. I mean, large groups going to the theater, I think that's out for the foreseeable future. But it's going to just have to be a cautious way of life in the future. But it is going to be a balance. It's going to have to be a balance between protecting the most vulnerable in society versus keeping the economy alive and not going into what would be worse than the Great Depression, and which could have even worse health consequences than the coronavirus itself. It's not an easy choice, is it?
Yeah. We're speaking with Robert Bartholomew, our friend over in New Zealand. We got to take a quick break. More next. 312-981-7200. Mampu Bala with you, 720 WGN. Fill me up, buttercup. Don't break my heart. 3:34 in the morning, 720 WGN. We're chatting with our friend Robert Bartholomew in New Zealand. Robert, you're a professor, right? Where do you teach at?
Well, I am an honorary senior lecturer in the Department of Psychological Medicine at the University of Auckland here in New Zealand.
And how long have you lived in New Zealand now?
I've been here for about 10 years. I'm a native of upstate New York on Lake Champlain, near Glens Falls, a place called Whitehall, New York, birthplace of the U.S. Navy, although other places claim it as well. Upstate New York is very different than downstate.
Yeah.
And I grew up on a farm. You know, if your car breaks down on the side of the road where I'm from, somebody you went to high school with will pull over and pick you up within probably 10 minutes.
And so all of your family is doing okay. Conditions much different upstate. So everybody, it's interesting as we talk about this and in our house with our kids, and we talk about it a lot because it's just what we do now. And sometimes there's some pushback on, do we really need to be doing this much stuff? And I think there's a lot of that around the country and around the world. And I think that I imagine at some point, everybody will be touched by this personally. They will know somebody or who gets it or gets sick from it or deals with it in some way, shape, or form. And that's when it will become a little more serious to all the doubters, I think, is once they know somebody who gets affected by it in some way. And I don't know, hopefully it doesn't get that far that everybody in some way, shape, or form. But when you think about the way we're so connected through social media and things today, you got to imagine at some point everybody's going to say, oh, I know somebody who got sick with this. They said it was awful, or they had symptoms and then they were fine. It was such a relief. We're seeing it now across the country with people that we feel like we know, with, you know, Prince Charles getting it and Boris Johnson getting it and Tom Hanks getting it and things like that. I think it's getting there. But I think at some point most people will know somebody as distant as they might be who they say, oh, yeah, I know somebody who had that. It's crazy.
On the other hand, it can work the other way because people can say, oh, Prince Charles got it. He's in his 70s and he's okay. And this person got it. Tom Hanks is in his 60s and he's okay. But statistically, the odds are greatly in your favor, even in your 60s and 70s. I mean, they just had a woman in Italy who was 102. and she had recovered. She looked better than I do. But what's interesting here, I think, is this is going to change us in ways we cannot yet imagine, because I think distance education is going to be much more mainstream after this. I've seen these experimental situations in supermarkets where you have your cart and you just go through and it scans everything in your cart automatically. Like, you don't have to take it out or anything, and just gives you the final number, and then you put your card in and you pay for it. Yeah. And so I think more and more there will be going to these things. And just like, you know, with the space program, they say Silly Putty and some of these other things were developed out of the space program. If you didn't have the space program, you wouldn't have had it. Well, as a result of COVID-19, I think you're going to have our society develop in certain ways, and certain sayings. We'll probably have certain sayings come out of this, just like in the 20s, it was the bee's knees and other things. I'm not sure what sayings we're going to have with COVID, but I think it'll happen because we're hunkered down for so long, and it's just it's going to change us in ways where we don't even foresee at this point.
Well, I would have to say the phrase social distancing will be part of our lexicon now forever, and I think we'll all know what that means. And 2 weeks ago or 3 weeks ago, I would have had no clue. If somebody said social distancing, I'd look at them like, what in the hell is that? I've never heard of that. But, you know, I think you're comparing it to one thing, but I think 9/11 is another one. We've changed the way we travel completely because of that. You know, between not being able to go all the way to the gate with your friends when you're dropping them off, to the TSA lines that we go through, to taking off your shoes, and all these things that we do that we never did beforehand. And I wonder, that's the thing I think that will change dramatically, is the travel, because that's where, you know, when I think about my work travel that has all been canceled so far this year, but when I get back to that in a couple of months, this thing won't be gone. It'll still be out there. And getting into a metal tube with 50 or 60 people squished together, breathing the same air for an hour or two, that's the part that's going to make me think, huh, I wonder if I should be doing this. And I wonder if we won't soon get used to getting on airplanes with 100 people who are all wearing a mask of some sort, or if there's other things that will be developed that will help make sure that, you know, this is something that it seems is not going to go away. So we have to figure out how to adjust. You're right. You talked about how the economy is just cratering around the world, and we're going to have to get back. And, you know, you talked about these tough decisions that are going to have to be made. There was quite a hullabaloo here in the States this week because a congressperson from somewhere, or a governor, I don't even remember where, they were talking about the Dow crashing, and that, you know, that grandparents would be willing to sacrifice for their kids' futures and their grandkids' futures. And there was a lot of talk back and forth about that. And I think the overriding thing is, we don't want to sacrifice anybody. Let's figure out how to handle this. But yes, it's killing the economy in many places. We're trying to figure out how can we open it back up and stuff. And I think going to restaurants, going to bars, all of these things, we're going to have to figure out ways that we live with this virus. And whether that's just being incredibly diligent about washing our hands, or keeping, you know, you mentioned the carts. Amazon is certainly opening up places like that already. They have, in the last year, opened up these little sort of like bodegas where you walk in, and I don't know if you scan something or if they know who you are because you're registered or what happens, but then you just pick up your stuff and you walk out and it's all scanned and taken care of. And I'm sure you're right that there'll be more of that. I know in grocery stores here already, they're working on early morning hours for senior citizens and the most vulnerable to come and shop. And then during the day, the rest, and then they're separating people out, trying to keep them 6 feet apart and things like that. But you're right. All the restaurants and the bars, they need to reopen. We had 3.some million jobless claims last week, like 4 times higher than we've ever had in a week, or 6 times higher than we've ever had a week in the history of the country. And that can't keep up, and we can't keep passing $2 trillion stimulus bills to keep things going. A bill is going to come due for the world at some point. So there is going to have to be a point soon where we figure out, okay, how do we assimilate back into society and still fight this off and still keep people as healthy as possible?
Well, you said it's killing the economy, but it's killing people. Yeah. You know, and it's going to have to be a balance. It's not going to be easy, but I think for the foreseeable future, until a vaccine is developed or a viable treatment method. I think for the foreseeable future, restaurants, the way we have eaten at restaurants and eaten out has changed, and I'm not sure when it will go back, but I can't see going to the movies like we have in the past. And that's going to change. You know, more and more people maybe will have home entertainment systems where they watch movies from their home. Maybe this is going to mark a shift from the way people watch movies.
I think you're right. You know, we already were shifting. The streaming was, you know, killing the movie, the cinema system here in the States, and I'm sure around the world. And now there are movies that were coming out in theaters that are being released early digitally. And this could be a real killer for the film industry, that so much stuff, people get so used to streaming and paying for things, people that maybe hadn't embraced it yet, that I don't know. I really imagine that there's a possibility of whole industries just changing in major ways. And will restaurants reopen with 30% fewer tables, so there's more space between tables, so people will feel comfortable coming out? Like, what will they do to try to, you know, encourage? Because there's two things. One, they're not open right now, so they got to reopen. Once they're reopened, I think people are so cooped up that they want to go out, but people are still going to be nervous about it, and there's going to be a hesitation to going out to a crowded restaurant. So they've got to figure out, how are they going to make people comfortable to say, no, it's safe. But we're all going to have to just intrinsically be smarter. And you wonder how much of it is, oh, if we're all together, that's dangerous. Well, a big part of that, right, is because we don't cover our mouths well when we sneeze. We don't wash our hands clearly as well as we should. All of those things, you wonder, if we did all of those things really well, if every sneeze went deeply into my elbow, not spraying across the room or not on my hand that I then shake with somebody, will we ever go back to shaking hands normally? All of those things that we might just personally need to change, and hopefully that itself will go a long way to slowing the spread of something like this.
Yeah, and you know, we're human beings, and we are literally out of touch with most of our fellow human beings, and that's a hard thing too. The, you know, you're in your bubble with your significant others, but you've got other people that are important to you as well, and you know, it's I think people are itching to get out and see their friends, but you know, there's no substitute for a hug or a kiss or anything like that, or a handshake even. So it's just a really tricky time, but it just can't go back to normal as I see it, because it's going to be still out there lurking, as you said, and it's almost like living with cancer. You know, it's a chronic condition. You have to learn to live with it. And we're going to have to see life change until they get a vaccine up and running. And I think that's going to be a while yet.
Yeah, I imagine it's going to be, although I think that rules will be suspended on how long things have to be tested and things like that. I think once something comes along that shows promise in a few cases, they will rush that thing to market as quickly as they possibly can.
Yeah. Maybe they can test it on Trump first and see how it goes. It's just really interesting how our world is going to continue to change, because you just can't go on the way we've gone on. But human beings are very good at being creative and being adaptive, especially when money is involved and you're trying to save your business. And so I think people will get creative more. Maybe there's going to be more takeout service. And then again, you know, how do you know the person making it didn't have the virus and is spreading it?
Yeah, that's the scary thing, is that businesses need to be really good. You know, there've been certainly been concerns here about businesses that aren't being good about letting their employees just stay home from work. You know, listen, if you're living paycheck to paycheck and you're not feeling great, but they're not going to give you time off with pay, that you're going to lose pay or maybe lose your job, you're probably going to go to work. And you're going to say, well, it's just a cold or it's just this, I'll get through it. and you don't know. And like you said, so many people aren't really showing symptoms. So that's really tough unless we get very diligent about telling businesses, you have to be supportive of those employees. And if they're sick, and now certainly people are going to take advantage of it then if that's offered, but that's a risk that you have to figure out how to take, right? Because people showing up to work sick just helps, you know, start this all over again and spread it around. And there was an article in the Tribune, or maybe I just saw a link to a Twitter feed about, you know, open workspaces have become so popular, right? The open floor plan, and we all collaborate and we work together. We're not doing the cubicles or the closed offices anymore. Will we go back to that? Will that be found to be, you know, these open spaces, the particles that are flying around, we need the cubicles back up. We need some separation from everybody. I think, like you were saying, there's going to be ways this changes us as a society, at least in the short term, that will be far and wide reaching.
Yeah, the other interesting thing is people, you know, I saw some doctors on tonight on one of the major news networks, and they were saying that they have every reason to believe that once the recovery period is over, you're not going to spread the virus. And if that's true, that turns out to be true, then you do have a segment of the population that in theory would be safe from spreading it. So you're going to have get a card that says, you know, you can work in a restaurant or something around food, and you don't have to worry about spreading it.
Yeah, it'll be really interesting. I guess it's going to, I imagine it's going to take them a while to figure out for sure, right? If how that works. And the other question is, like, can you spread it without having it? If you bring it in on your hand, because so much of it is about what we're touching and how we're bringing it to ourselves. And then, you know, if you came from home and you're not good about washing your hands, what could you bring? Who you're around? Things like that. It's really just going to change things. That's for sure.
There's a part of me that says, you know what, just give it to me and get it over with, and then I can get on with my life. On the other hand, you know, statistically, the odds are I'll be fine, but who knows? Maybe I have an underlying health condition I'm not aware of, and do you really want to roll the dice?
That's what seems to be so unknown, because you're right. Everything we hear of is, you know, 80-plus is the highest mortality rate. Like, I want to say 80-plus is saying it's like 8%, right? And then the younger you are, and that all depends on what other health conditions you have and things. But then you'll read something here or there about a 24-year-old who had it, or a 44-year-old, or a 50-year-old who seemingly was otherwise healthy. And it sounds really awful what they go through, and the need for these ventilators and all of these things. So it's scary, too. And on the one hand, you want to say, well, if it's just a flu-like, I've been through the flu a million times, it's fine. But you don't know what this is going to end up being like. And that's the part of the unknown is what's scary about it, because you do hear some horror stories. And while for the most part, 98% of the people are going to survive, maybe a certain percent of the people are going to go through a lot of hard time. But as long as medical care is available, they'll be fine. But I think, you know, when you say, oh, just give it to me, it's fine, let me get it over with, I feel sort of like, if I get it, I don't care that much. I worry about who I spread it to. I don't want to spread it to my mother-in-law who's in her 70s, or my mom who's in her 70s. I don't want to be my buddy I work with very closely at my company. His wife is a type 1 diabetic. And I'm very scared about what would happen if, you know, all these news reports keep mentioning, or, you know, certain people with diabetes. So that scares me. Like, I don't want to take it. I don't want to put him in harm's way or take a chance on I was the one who brought it into his house. And then, you know, so it's all these different things we're thinking about and worrying about, in ways that we try to protect not only ourselves, but, you know, protect the population as well.
Yeah, it's a balance, that's for sure. And we just are going to have to adapt to a new world for the short term anyway, probably for a year. Because apparently it takes time to test the vaccines out, even when you take some of the, you know, all these safeguards off and it's rushed through. It just takes time to make sure it works properly.
Yeah. Yeah, we're not going to know for a little while. We're going to have to change our ways and keep washing our hands in the meantime. Are there shortages of things in New Zealand? Is there? And explain this to me, Robert. You're our mass hysteria guy. I know we talked about this last week, I think, but I'm still not wrapping my head completely around why we rush for toilet paper. Why is that our biggest concern in the world? Is it just the personal nature of it that we're so worried about living without it?
Well, what I find fascinating is I've lived in countries where that wouldn't be an issue because they don't use it. When I used to live in Malaysia, and in the early 90s, I mean, nobody used it there. I brought my own. And it was seen as a stigma if you're using it. It was fascinating. That's why you always shake with your right hand, not your left hand. Now, maybe things have changed since then, but I've come to the conclusion, two conclusions from going to a number of supermarkets here when they had the panic in New Zealand. One is, if you walk into a supermarket and they've stacked a lot of toilet paper at the front, it has a very calming effect. Secondly, no one in New Zealand likes chickpeas, because I have been to multiple supermarkets here where the canned section was just devastated. There's nothing, but there are chickpeas, and I don't know why that is. I mean, I don't personally like them myself, but I eat them because they're good for me. It's fascinating. I mean, people just clean the shelves out,
yeah.
But there's plenty of stock, and they're just worried. Now everybody's got all this food they possibly couldn't eat for the next month, and they got more toilet paper than you could possibly use. And it's fascinating. It's I don't know why everybody wants toilet paper, but they do. And some guy in Australia today, I don't know if you saw it, he was arrested, him and a group of people, for going to these warehouses and stealing just
pallets?
I think it was hundreds of packs of toilet paper. I think he was going to sell it on the open market.
Jeez. Well,
it's the new currency.
Yeah, it really is. It's something. Well, at least I know two things now. I know that if I have to survive the apocalypse in New Zealand, I'll be okay as long as I like hummus, because we can buy all the chickpeas and make hummus, and then we'll be fine.
That's right.
And I think you're onto something here. If we bring a little of the Malaysian culture here and just say, listen, no more toilet paper, we'll just take care of things ourselves, we would be able to much more easily enforce all the social distancing, I think, because that's so not part of our culture that will freak everybody out so bad that nobody will get near each other anyway. So maybe that's the key.
Yeah, I saw a shop the other day before they would have closed that shop down, and they had a box of 50 masks for like $85. And from what I'm seeing, the masks don't really help that much, or if you use them, you have to change it. You really should be changing it after a couple of hours, right?
Yeah. I don't know about a couple of hours, but certainly, you know, we have healthcare professionals now using them for days where they definitely would not have been. And it seems to me that, you know, there's these different degrees of masks and how good they are. To me, the mask seems more to help you not spread it versus necessarily taking it in. But also, I would think that the masks, you know, because at least you're, whatever you've got coming out, you're kind of keeping within yourself. But it seems like with this 6 feet thing, everything I've heard them say, because, you know, if I'm talking, if I'm spraying particles, they're not going to go further than 6 feet. And it seems to me that if we're avoiding people, we should be pretty safe. If somebody has it, but you're not near them, you're not touching their stuff. I like the idea of the mask, or, you know, but they say also it can come from droplets out of your eyes. There's so much stuff out there about this stuff and how it spreads and how it doesn't spread. I think all we can do is wash our hands, stay away from people, do the best we can, and hopefully this gets figured out sooner rather than later.
Well, absolutely. But one thing's for sure, it's very contagious. I mean, I guess you could have it on your hand and just rub your eye and get it, right?
Well, that's what they say. Quit touching your face. Quit, doing all these things. And you don't realize how often we actually do those things. I think I saw a study that says you touch your face 3,000 times a day, which seems insanely ridiculous. I don't know if it can even be
that
true.
That seems like a lot. Yeah.
It does seem like a lot of touching. All right, Robert Bartholomew. Go ahead.
Yep.
No, go ahead. Finish your last
one. No, that's I got nothing left.
Out of the tank. Robert in New Zealand, stay safe. I'm glad you're stocked up on the TP, and I hope things stay well. And we'll check back in with you in a couple of weeks and see how things are going.
Okay, take care.
All right, Robert, thank you so much. We always appreciate our friend Robert Bartholomew. Patrick and Mike got some comments to make. Let's take a quick break. We'll get to them after the news next on 720 WGN. Good morning, everybody. 4:08 in the morning here on 720 WGN. Matt Bubala with you until 5 a.m. when Orion Samuelson takes over with the morning show. We're going to talk to our friend Brock Blake from Lendio in just a minute or two, talk about what the stimulus plan means for your small business or your loan needs. But we had a couple of callers holding on for the last little bit, and I want to get them in real quick. Patrick, you're on 720 WGN. Good morning.
Matt.
Patrick, how are
you? Great to hear you, dude. I haven't heard you in a little while.
What's going on, bud?
First off, the toilet paper frenzy completely media. Media.
Now, explain that. Hold on. Patrick, everybody likes to blame the media for the frenzy, and the media is causing this. The media is doing this. I was not on the radio 4 weeks ago going, everybody run out and get the toilet paper! Get the toilet paper! Hurry up! Nobody said that. You didn't see that anywhere. Nobody was going, oh my God, the coronavirus is coming. Get your toilet paper! How are you blaming that on us?
No. The TV media showed people hoarding toilet paper on the store.
And that's fine. That's fine. They did show that. Why did they show that, though? They showed it because people were doing
it. The coronavirus. These people are hoarding toilet paper. And they show people, you know, pulling a cart with five packs, 10 packs, whatever.
Right.
And fighting over the toilet paper in the store. So all of a sudden, you know.
I agree, but this is a chicken and egg argument, Patrick, because the media showed that because people were doing it. People didn't. Now, more people probably did it. You're right, because then we learned people were doing it, so then we thought, oh, my God, they're doing it. Maybe we need to do
it. So all they see is the news showing some guy going out of the grocery store with his shopping cart filled with toilet paper.
But why was that guy there doing that? That's what I never get. Is why do people immediately turn to, and thank you so much for the call, Patrick, why is that immediately what people turn to? Wait a minute, there's a problem in the world? We better stack up on the toilet paper. Because why? Why are we afraid that's what they're going to stop producing? I never understand that. Like, well, if the world's going to end, at least we'll be clean down there. Mike, you're on 720 WGN. How are you, buddy?
Hey, Matt. Good to hear talking to you. I catch as much as I can on a Friday.
Thank you.
Listen, back in grade school, I don't know, right before high school, and I'm sure you know this book, 1984.
I never read it. I certainly know of it. Maybe this is a good one to read right now. But yes, go ahead. What are you going to say about Big Brother?
Yeah, you know, the thing is that it scared the heck out of me. You know, he wrote this book in the 40s. I was probably, I don't know, 14 and 89 when I had to read the book. And it was 1984, Big Brother. And I'm like, he predicted so many things that were already had started and it was weird. And I'm like, well, one day the government's going to do this or do that. I don't remember it focusing so much on a pandemic. But,
I thought it was just on them watching you and controlling you.
Yeah, everybody watching you and controlling and the whole thing in terms of how we're living now and have been even before the virus. But the other comment I wanted to make is that it's just so odd that I don't even know, odd isn't even the right word. It's so sad that one of the things that I keep hearing about the social distancing, you know, even prior to social distancing, prior to the virus, we were already becoming an isolated society. You know, our children or even people were just not knowing how to socialize any longer. One of the human conditions of feeling well or making someone feel better is by holding a hand, touching a shoulder, giving someone a hug. Now they're telling us we may not ever have that, but that's an innate human quality. isn't there studies about that all over the place?
Yeah, I think you're right about that. I think there are. And I think for a certain amount of time, we are going to change the way we do things. Maybe we won't handshake as quickly, or maybe we'll just handshake and then we'll sanitize. I don't know what'll come of it. But you know, it's interesting, Mike, and I'm going to let you go because I have to get our guest on. But thank you so much for calling. I disagree a little bit that we're getting away from being social and all of those things. I see kids today more comfortable, like girls arm in arm walking, that I didn't see girls doing that when I was kids, and guys much more in touch with their feelings, guys giving each other hugs and shaking hands and doing things that I feel like it's a different form. And I think you think that because all the kids are on social media and all these things that we're more distant from each other. And I'm sure in some ways we are, but I don't feel that we had gotten away from human touch and being close to each other. I think that's an innate human capability and it adapts to the different societal norms at times. But I really don't feel like we had gotten that far away from that. How this will change things, we don't know, but we'll adapt and we'll get through it. Joining us on the phone right now is Brock Blake. He's the CEO and founder of Lendio. That's the largest online marketplace for business loans in the United States. Thanks so much for joining us this morning, Brock.
Hey, Matt. Thanks for having me.
Absolutely. So this has had to have been a crazy couple of weeks for a company like yours, I would imagine.
No question. The demand for capital right now from small business owners in America is through the roof, and rightfully so. It's unprecedented times, and they are going through some difficult struggles, no question.
Well, let me ask you, during the last 2 weeks, has the demand been great, or is everybody kind of stopped in their tracks to wait and see what's going to happen? Because I imagine you're hoping a lot of businesses say, okay, we're going to figure out how to get through this. We're going to need some capital, so we're going to borrow. But I would think a lot of places, restaurants and things like that, who are in a pause mode right now, who are shut down, are stopping and thinking, okay, do we borrow money and figure out how to do this, or are we going to have to go bankrupt and start over again? I would imagine that's a tough question for a lot of small businesses right now.
No question. For sure, the demand is higher than it's ever been. Business owners are, they saw their revenue drop basically off a cliff over the last 2 weeks when everyone was social distancing and not frequenting bars and restaurants and event centers and whatnot. And so business owners need the capital to grow. The bad news is that at the same time, a lot of the lenders out there have paused lending. They've pulled back and because it's hard for them to really assess risk. They don't know if that business is going to be in business in a week or 2 weeks from now. And so, it's difficult to throw good money after bad. So it's a challenging time all around for small business owners. Fortunately, this CARES Act was passed yesterday. And for me, as a light at the end of the tunnel for these small business owners to get desperately needed capital into their hands.
Well, tell me what you know so far. I know that this stimulus bill is very brand new, and so maybe not everything is known about how it's going to work yet, but there was a lot in there about small business loans. Do we have any details yet on how that's exactly going to work?
Yeah, there are quite a few details. And let me explain this. There's a lot of confusion as well. So a lot of people think there's two programs out there that Trump's announced. So one is the CARES Act that was announced yesterday, and then 2 weeks ago he announced this SBA disaster relief, which was a $50 billion. The SBA disaster relief, what you have to do to get that is you have to go to the SBA and apply for a loan. Unfortunately, the SBA is not equipped to handle the volume they've got, and so their site's been crashing every single day since he announced it. And in fact, now what they've done is they've said, okay, don't apply online. What we want you to do is download these PDFs, fill them out by hand, scan them, and upload them back again, or mail them in through direct mail. Candidly, I don't have a lot of confidence around that SBA disaster program. I wouldn't recommend a lot of business owners go there, but I am excited about and optimistic about this CARES Act. The CARES Act is $367 billion that's allocated and dedicated to small businesses across America. And really, almost every business will be able to qualify for this product. Essentially, what it means is that all you have to prove is that you're in business and that you've been negatively affected by the coronavirus, and then third, that you're smaller than 500 employees. If that's the case, then you'll be able to qualify for a loan. Maybe the cheapest rates you'll ever be able to qualify for a loan, 3.75% interest. And what's interesting is they've already identified the loan size calculation. So this is how you'd be able to calculate your loan size. You look at your monthly rent plus your monthly payroll plus your monthly utilities and times that number by 2.5. Yeah, so monthly rent, monthly payroll, monthly utilities, times it by 2.5. That's the loan amount that you'll be able to qualify for. And it will be distributed through banks, credit unions, and some non-bank lenders in your communities to get you the capital. Hopefully that comes in about the next week to 10 days.
So that's not through the stimulus bill. You're saying that's through something separate called the CARES Act?
It's the same thing. The stimulus bill and the CARES Act are the same thing.
Okay. All right. So when they're talking about all this money available for small business loans, it's really just about helping small businesses stay afloat for the next few months while they were suffering in some way from all the shutdowns and things like that. Because you're saying it's your rent, your payroll, your utilities, whatever your monthly costs are, they'll loan you this money for like two. Basically, it's a two and, you know, the loan. I don't know how long the loans are for, but the amount you're going to get is basically what you need to cover your basic expenses for 2.5 months.
That's right, and they're 10-year terms. And actually, there's a portion of this bill that says any of the money that you use during what they're calling this kind of coronavirus impact period. So any money you're using to keep employees on payroll and keep your business lights on over the next, 6 weeks, some of that capital, it may not be the entire loan amount that you get, but some of that capital can actually be completely forgiven. So you won't even have to pay that back, more like a grant. So there's a lot of positive things in this CARES Act, the stimulus bill that I'm quite excited about to help small businesses. And here's the deal. We did a survey with America's Small Businesses. 41% of businesses will not make it 3 to 4 weeks without getting some sort of infusion of capital.
Yeah.
We're already seeing huge amounts of layoffs. We're seeing businesses close their door. It's just a difficult time, and this cannot come soon enough.
So it's an interesting thing, and I think what will interest a lot of small businesses or make them curious is the idea that possibly some of these loans or portions of them would be forgiven. What are the prerequisites on whether the part of the loan would get forgiven?
Basically, the amount that you use, like I said, from the time you get the loan, I think they specified for 8 weeks that any of the capital that you're using over the next 8 weeks to maintain employees on your payroll and pay for your rent and utilities, that direct money that you're using for those expenses can be forgiven.
Interesting. Well, and that sounds great for, I mean, because how many restaurants are trying to, that's my biggest concern is these restaurants that have had and bars that have had to shut down for this amount of time. Is this going to be key for them to get the capital to keep going, especially if it could be forgiven? Because I would think a lot of restaurants, because you're bordering on things. But if you're going to be able to get a lot of that money forgiven, that would be a great incentive to open the doors back up and give it a go and get things up and running again.
No question. We're strongly encouraging every business that's been negatively affected by this. Come see us at Lendio. We'll help you navigate through that process. And because literally, I think 90% of Main Street America and across, businesses across the U.S. will be able to qualify for these loans, and it will be able to help get them through this difficult time.
There's a certain amount that was set aside for this. So is it important that businesses find out quickly and apply quickly before, I imagine there's a possibility the money can run out?
It's $367 billion. Now, that is an enormous number. But when you consider there's 30 million small businesses in America, and you break down the numbers and some of those some of those businesses, you know, they're going to be 450 employees. That's actually not that small. So that loan size may be quite large.
Yeah.
So yes, if I'm a business owner, it's not available yet. It's like I said, I think it's probably going to be a week to 2 weeks before they actually get all the details and they can distribute it. Others think it's going to be longer than that. But the minute that it is available, I would definitely jump on it and pursue those loans.
A texter, and I don't know if you can answer this, Brock, but a texter writes, what about payroll taxes? Do we know if there's going to be any forgiveness on the government or delay in paying those or how that's going to work?
Yes, that's going to be part of they have inserted in the CARES Act information around tax forgiveness or tax deferral. And I do believe that the payroll tax is included in your calculation of the loan amount that you can qualify for.
And that's part of what can be forgiven?
Yes.
Lendio.com is the website. Brock, I was tooling around with it earlier. It's very easy to use. You can fill out all sorts of information on your business and what you might need and how your business works, and then you guys will come up with an estimate to help you out once you register and sign in. Is there anything else people should know about Lendio.com? Is there a fee for joining or anything like that?
No, great question. It's free for the business owner. And the way to think about Lendio is, you know, you use marketplaces like you use Expedia to shop for hotels, you use Yelp to shop for restaurants. You use Lendio to shop for business loans. So we have 75 lenders on our platform, and it's free for the business owner. You fill out one application, and then you can comparison shop across these 75 lenders to choose the loan that's the best fit for your business to get the capital you need. And so it's we get paid by the lender, and we're extremely passionate about helping these small business owners get that capital to start and grow their business.
Lendio.com. Brock Blake, thank you so much for jumping on the phone with us, and good luck in the weeks that come.
Thank you, Matt. Thanks for having me. Appreciate it.
Absolutely. Lendio.com. If you've got a small business and you want to figure out ways to navigate what's coming out and what's available, Lendio.com, Lendio.com can help you out. 4:26 in the morning here on 720 WGN. In a few minutes, we're going to check in with our friend Julia McFarlane. She is a BBC reporter. She's been on with us many times over the years. She reports for ABC News now out of London. And we want to ask her, you know, Boris Johnson has tested positive. Prince Charles tested positive. And what's going on over in England? How are they seeing things in the other countries in Europe and Italy and a lot of places that have been hit very hard? So we'll check in with her on all of that coming up in a few minutes here on 720 WGN. Matt Bubala with you here on 720 WGN. I'm going to get used to the buttons in this studio. It's hard to get used to. I don't know why. The studio is, I know it's exactly the same. Everything is the same as the other studio. It feels different. And I can't get used to the headphones. 312-981-7200. Our friend Julia McFarlane from ABC News in London is going to call in momentarily, I hope. I had a couple of questions that I wasn't able to get to with Brock. Brock Blake from Lendio. Lendio.com is the website. 847 asks, for small businesses, what about boss reducing my hours and pay because I will get stimulus money? Oof. That's interesting. What about that? I don't know. I mean, that sucks. I'm sorry about that. But I imagine the boss is trying to reduce costs because business is down. And he used that as, hey, at least you're going to get this money. 630 asked, what about single owner businesses? Well, if you pay yourself a paycheck and you're not going to lend yourself off, that's a good question, though. Does it have to be at least two employees and not just one? I guess we will know more about that in the weeks to come as this bill comes out and we start to be able to get used to everything that will be in it and with it and what will help people. And I think they said that those checks are going to take, I thought it said 4 to 6 weeks before the checks were going to come in, which is a long time. I know for a lot of people who are immediately out of work and then struggling with that. But, you know, you got to hold on as best you can. And hopefully, you know, I feel bad for people in the restaurant business and other places like that where there's just nothing you can do. Places are shut down. And right now you're just not getting the work that you wanted to have. And I can, you know, grocery stores seem to be hiring. I know Amazon said recently they were hiring 100,000 people across the country. Certain places are certainly doing really well during all this. Not that they, you know, wanted to profit from this, but certainly ordering out has got to be way up, and DoorDash and Grubhub and those guys have to be doing incredibly well as far as the orders, although a lot of them have tried to reduce fees and help people out at this time. It's nice. I feel like you've seen a lot of businesses kind of come together to do good for each other and help each other out. But we still have a long road ahead, and it's going to get better. We just got to be happy. One thing I'm excited about is, and I don't know what you guys have been watching and doing. I was mentioning earlier in the show, we've been kind of selecting shows and movies that the whole family can watch together. And one that was recommended to us by a friend is a show on Showtime called Homeland. It stars Claire Danes. It's been on for quite a while. I think they're going into their last season. And now, we just started this with the kids. I will tell you, it's a very adult show. There's a lot of fast forwarding going on during the parts that are a little more risque, that feel uncomfortable to watch with your 14 and 18 year old children. That's for sure. But it is really, really good. And we've enjoyed that a lot. We watch Good Will Hunting with the kids. So we've had a lot of good times binging things. And I'm so excited because Ozark is back. And if you have Netflix and you haven't watched Ozark, it's only in season 3, just came out. Jason Bateman's in it. Laura Linney, great cast, great show. Only like 8 to 10 episodes a season, so easy to get through, and the third season just came out. So for your weekend pleasure, binging pleasure, Ozark back on Netflix. Jumping on the phone with us right now is our good friend Julia McFarlane from ABC News in London. Hey, Julia, how are you?
Hey, Matt, how are you? Are you in the studio or are you self-isolating like the rest of us?
Myself, my producer Jess, and producer Bob Ferguson are the only people on the floor. We have enacted pretty strict rules here at WGN about social. They're doing a very good job here and being very strict about it. The studio I normally broadcast from is literally taped off with caution tape, like there was a murder in there, because it has been deep cleaned and sanitized, so it's ready to go. If somebody ever becomes sick here and they have to shut down one studio, they've got the other one completely shut off so operations can move there. We can't bring anybody on the floor. Most of all the sales staff, everybody's working from home. Only people who absolutely have to be here. And for our daytime shows that have multiple people on them, I think they've got, you know, traffic reporters working from home and sports reporters working from home. And even some of the hosts, if they can get the equipment to houses, they're trying to keep people as separated as possible. Yeah.
I mean, that's what they're doing with ABC, and I have to tell you, I am so excited to be back in a proper studio with proper lights and the big microphone and everything, because I feel like I've been working from home with my iPhone kit, filming inside my living room, making sure it's tidy. But it's extraordinary. And I was on the phone to one of our engineers at ABC last night, and he was like, you know, I have never seen inside the houses of so many on-air talent before in my life.
I'm sure.
And it's a whole new way of working that we're all getting used to.
And it's amazing to me. I know there's a big article in our Chicago Tribune earlier this week about how local news is handling this, because on the TV stations as well, a lot of them are broadcasting from home, and they had pictures of all the different weather people who've set up green screens in their house. And I'm amazed that, like, they're showing the setup and, like, they're on their iPhone. Like, that's crazy. The technology is good enough that we're doing high definition broadcasts from iPhones now, and it's working out okay.
I mean, we're doing Good Morning America from our sitting rooms, which is pretty crazy. And I never would have thought that would have happened.
Yeah, there's so many things that, like, 3 months ago we'd say, well, that would never happen. And here we are.
I know.
Well,
we're only 3 months into 2020, Matt. I don't know if I can survive the rest of this year. I don't know if I've got what it takes to make it to the end.
I saw somebody on Twitter wrote something the other day that said, I subscribed to 2020 and my 90-day subscription is up. I want to know how I can cancel and go back to 2019.
Brilliant. Yeah. I feel the same way sometimes.
Well, let's talk about what's going on over there. So you're in London. And last time you and I talked, Julia, it was before we even had, I guess we called it Megxit with Brit, with Harry and Meghan. leaving. That's such old news now that we won't even touch on it today. And the craziness that's going on now is you've got Prince Charles has tested positive, and now your Prime Minister Boris Johnson has tested positive. How are Londoners and the UK handling that news?
Right. So Prince Charles, he became the first member of the royal family to announce that he had contracted the virus. He had felt some symptoms. He's up in their country home in Scotland called Birkhall. It's actually on the Queen's Balmoral Estate, a really, really beautiful part of Scotland, in Aberdeenshire. Now, he was tested by the NHS, and so was his wife, Camilla. She tested negative. So they are living in separate quarters at their home in Birkhall. Clarence House said that Prince Charles, he's been carrying out quite a lot of engagements, and so they are not sure where or who he may have contracted the virus. But because he's been quite busy, he is continuing to do his work from home. He's having his meals brought to the door, and he's keeping some distance from Camilla to make sure that she doesn't get it. And the advice from the NHS is that you self-isolate for 7 days. So I expect that they will want to test him again before they let him back out.
Yeah.
And on Friday, yesterday, we had, Thursday night, we had the news that the Prime Minister, Boris Johnson, he also tested positive for the virus very, very late on Thursday because he had had symptoms earlier on Thursday. And the Health Secretary, Matt Hancock, who he'd been working very closely with, he felt ill since Wednesday. They both had a temperature and a continuing cough, and those are the main symptoms that the British health authorities have said for everyone to look out for. And it's interesting, it was obviously huge news yesterday, and it's still sort of top of the agenda today. Everyone's wondering how the Prime Minister is doing. But because he made the announcement by video, and he looked obviously very comfortable in his home, in an apartment in Downing Street, he said he's going to continue working from home, he's going to continue leading the government's response, and he stressed that his symptoms were mild. So I think largely people have been quite relaxed about it because he looked to be his usual self. He looked to be in good spirits, and he was still not exactly making jokes, but he was still using his very colourful language. That's one of his very familiar characteristics. And I think deliberately making sure that everyone knows that he's the same old Boris, and he's going to get on with the job.
So,
but he is going to be self-isolating in Downing Street. And of course, remember that his partner, Carrie Simmons, she is pregnant. Both of them will have been under a lot of stress. The Prime Minister has been having a lot of crunch meetings with government officials, cabinet ministers, and senior health executives. And so there are a lot of people now who are going to be being careful and watching to see if they have felt any symptoms, if they have been in close contact with either the Prime Minister, the Health Secretary, or the chief medical officer who has also got the virus.
So if Boris Johnson would have shown up with like very proper English and like his hair done up in a very stylish way, you would have been more worried then?
Everyone would have been like, something's wrong. Is that really Boris Johnson or is someone standing in for him? No, he seems fine. But he has, one thing that has happened is a lot of people have been slightly criticizing the Prime Minister for possibly not following his own advice. There are some pictures in the papers this morning of the Prime Minister meeting with other cabinet ministers in their Cobra meetings. People are, of course, saying that the lecterns from which he has been holding his briefings have not been 2 meters apart from each other. As the government has said, you need to maintain a distance of 2 meters from the nearest person. And, of course, there have been briefings where it has been those three men, the chief medical officer, Boris Johnson, Prime Minister, and Matt Hancock, the health minister, all three of them together, each of them standing very close to each other. So there is a little bit of a wry criticism of the Prime Minister for perhaps not abiding by his own instructions to the nation.
Well, we do the same thing here. We do a daily update with the President and Vice President and 6 different people every day up on the stage, and there's 8 of them standing right next to each other, shoulder to shoulder, as they tell us all to isolate and, you know, do all the proper things. And, you know, I guess our politicians, it's a do as we say, not as we do type situation.
But it does send out a message, and the cabinet secretary who stood in for the Prime Minister and the Health Secretary yesterday, Michael Gove, he mentioned that the virus does not recognize rank. And so I think it is a strong message to people in Britain that actually, you know, we need to take this seriously. There is a reason we are all going a little bit mad, locking ourselves in our own houses, going a bit stir crazy, but that's because this virus is incredibly infectious, and it seems anybody, even the Prime Minister, can contract it.
Now, I haven't kept up very well with what's going on in the UK because we're nonstop with the news here in the States right now. But are you guys under what we're calling it a shelter in place, where here in the city of Chicago, we're asked to stay home unless it's absolutely necessary. Restaurants are closed except for takeout or delivery. Pharmacies are open. Grocery stores are open. Pretty much every other business is closed. People are working from home or not working. And our mayor had to go to the extraordinary lengths of closing the lakefront and all the parks and the beaches to get people to take it even more seriously. Are you kind of under the same restrictions there?
Yes, more or less. We are slightly more strict on official guidance. So the government has ordered people to only leave the house for one form of daily exercise, be it a run or a walk, and only to leave the house in order to get to go shopping, to get food, and to minimize those trips as much as possible, or for medical purposes, if we need to seek medical attention or we need to go to the hospital. These conditions have been put in place, will be put in place for another week or so, and then there will be more guidance on whether the lockdown will continue. A lot of cafes and restaurants and bars, well, all the bars are closed, but a lot of cafes and restaurants have also closed, presumably because the owners have decided to cut their costs and have shut down their restaurants until a time as when they can reopen. Or, sadly, there are a lot of places which are really under threat of having to close down out of lost sales. So over this past week, there have been a large series of announcements that the government has offered to try and keep a lot of these businesses afloat. It's offering loans and tax relief to a lot of businesses and workers, whether they're self-employed or not. And so the government has been working on a lot of economic policy to try and keep the economy afloat. But the reality is a lot of people are unable to work in this situation. And so the longer that this lockdown goes on, the more worried people are. And of course, you know, it comes to that time of the month, at the end of the month, when people have their bills and their mortgages to pay. So it's a really, really difficult situation for people, especially in the hospitality industry.
I imagine you're going through the exact same thing we are here. And has your unemployment rate skyrocketed? We blew away our record for monthly unemployment claims. It was announced earlier this week by like quadruple the highest it's ever been in the country.
That's the same here. Millions of people have filed for unemployment benefits in the last few weeks. And there are also other things which have been quite interesting that I've heard over recent days, one of which is people who had been planning on moving home during this lockdown, because of course it can take 6 months, especially if you're in a chain, if you are selling your property and also buying another property, and there are several people who need to move at the same time, because it's that kind of, you know, that kind of musical chairs thing that takes months of planning and logistics and documentation and getting everything right with your solicitors and your lawyers and everything. And of course, the date is often planned, you know, months and months in advance. And I know a few people actually who are in that situation, and they're not sure how they can move, or they're not sure if they will be able to move. And so, you know, this lockdown is affecting people in so many ways.
And Julia, you were telling me, well, let me just ask, you do sound quite stuffy at times, and like you're sniffling and things like that. And you had texted me that you're worried that you might be coming down with it as well. What's going on?
So this is an interesting thing. About a week ago, I very, very suddenly, it appeared to happen all at once, I had lost my sense of smell entirely. couldn't smell a thing, and I didn't have a blocked nose or anything, and I basically became nose blind. Very, very disorientating, very confusing thing to have happen to me, because it's never happened to me before. And it is apparently, in a few countries, one being France, it is being increasingly recognized as a symptom of coronavirus, particularly in people who are not exhibiting any other symptoms. So when I was last in the office just over a week ago, I had my temperature checked and it was normal, and I haven't really had much of a cough. But I all of a sudden lost my sense of smell, and it is something, what I did a bit of research, and thousands of people, it seems, are going through the same thing. Because, of course, COVID-19, it is a respiratory virus, and so it affects your nose, your lungs, your throat. And so one of the symptoms is a loss of your sense of smell and partially your sense of taste. Now, there are some people who have experienced that for a few days. Others have had it for a couple of weeks. A friend of mine hasn't been able to smell anything for almost 2 weeks. But what is interesting is that here in the UK, they are not classifying anything other than a temperature and a continuing cough as symptoms of the virus. So it's quite a difficult situation, because I will not be tested because I don't have those symptoms. But every medical professional I've spoken to, a lot of people I've spoken to, have said that I probably do have the virus. So that is, it's a difficult thing, because what happens if I have to go into a hospital as I did yesterday in order to go for a blood test for an ongoing health condition, potentially putting myself into close contact with health workers. And right. Yet, having explained all this, I was told to go to the hospital because on official guidance, I did not have the virus. So it's worrying, and it's quite a concerning evolving part of this disease.
Is that here in the U.S. there's been a lot of talk and complaining about we're not testing enough, and we've been under it sounds similar to you guys, test only people that have symptoms that need the test. Other countries that have done much more widespread testing seem to have had better success flattening the curve. Is there a lot of talk over there about we're not testing enough?
That is definitely a very strong criticism of the government at the moment. They've carried out tens of thousands of tests. There are around 14,000 confirmed cases. But there is now a big push in the UK for having health professionals to receive testing, not just testing for the virus, but also testing for antibodies to see if they have had it. Because there is now an increasingly huge number of National Health Service staff who are self-isolating at home because they've come into contact with patients who have had it, exhibiting symptoms, or someone in their family or their household is exhibiting symptoms. And we are experiencing a shortage of medical professionals in this country in order to deal with this crisis, particularly in the months ahead. Wow. The government has called for thousands of retired doctors to come back to work to help in the effort. So at the moment in this country, facing this criticism, there is a renewed push this weekend for hundreds of critical care nurses and doctors to be tested to find out if they have the virus, to find out if they have had the virus, if they have some kind of immunity, having already contracted it maybe earlier in the year. And they will be the first first sort of big push of getting more testing done in this country will be for health professionals.
Yeah, it sounds very similar to what's going on here in the States. We've been cities have called back retired workers, seeing who will come help. And, I think that's fascinating. I would love the availability to have the test to know if you did have it, because as they say, so many people will have it and never even know that they had it. And months ago, right in it was late February, I was on a work trip to Las Vegas, and the group of us that were out there came back not feeling great, and we didn't have all the symptoms you hear about, but now we're hearing about there were other things, and you might not even know you had it, and you wonder, like, could I possibly had this and not know it and been spreading it around at the time?
Yeah, well, I had flu in the middle of January, but I suspect it was regular. I suspect it was regular flu because I didn't have this loss of smell and some of these other symptoms that others have been talking about. But I'll just say quickly that on that aggressive new phase of testing, the British government has announced that it is opening three new laboratories in order to process the samples taken from NHS staff. And the issue is that there just isn't really the bandwidth at the moment to do large-scale, aggressive, nationwide testing and to have it processed fast enough to have any kind of actionable sort of impact because, of course, this virus appears to be spreading quickly.
Yeah.
So I think the government's responding to the criticism that they're not testing enough, but I think the reality on the ground is that there hasn't been the infrastructure in place to carry out a widespread national testing program in the way that we need to. So there are three new laboratories which are being opened specifically for COVID-19 testing.
Julia McFarlane is with ABC News in London. You catch her often on the weekends on Good Morning America. I guess you got bumped this weekend because we got so much going on here, but I'm sure we can find you on our local ABC station soon, right?
Thank you, Matt. Possibly tomorrow.
Excellent. Thank you so much for joining us, Julie, and feel better, stay well, stay isolated, wash those hands, for goodness sakes. Quick break, and we'll say good morning to Orion Samuelson next here on 720 WGN. For being with us, everybody, we appreciate you tuning in every weekend, and, you know, just keep in mind, WGN Radio is here for you throughout this and forevermore, but certainly in this time where maybe you're feeling a little bit alone and need a friend to lean on, always can flip on the radio, and we're here with something to hopefully entertain and inform you, and you can follow this show, Matt Bubala Show, on Facebook, The Matt Bubala Show. Give us a like there and follow me on Twitter at Matt Bubala. And right now, let's say good morning to our friend Orion Samuelson. Hey, Big O.